This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Hey, you the guy from Ajax?
Yeah, you bet.
All right.
Who are you bringing the eighth? Well, they're on their way. I'm the supervisor. I don't carry this stuff. Who's bringing them, Freddy?
Yeah, Freddy.
You're supposed to have been here over an hour ago, boy.
Well, traffic was murder. You know, one of those manure spreaders jackknifed on the Santa Ana? God-awful mess. You should see my shoes. Whew. Ah, that's a terrific wing. I love this shape.
Hey, do us a favor, pal.
Name's Liddy. Gordon Liddy.
Gord, take a look at the seventh FETSA valve, will you? I think it's been sticking.
It's probably the humidity.
That's funny. No, what I think it is myself is the bypass line.
It could be the bypass line, yeah. Maybe I should take a look at it.
Gordo. Back here?
Don't tell me my business, boy. Just checking the luggage. Somebody ought to clean these windows. There is a tremendous buildup of gook all over them. Look at that.
I think it's the bypass line, yeah. I'm going to need some pliers and a set of 30-weight ball bearings.
What?
Yeah. Tell you what, I got to go to my truck. If Fred gets here before I'm back, you can tell him to start without me.
What the hell you need ball bearings for?
Oh, come on, guys. It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays.
It is 22 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for fun. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. That being said, I'm not really sure the phones are actually on as such, per se. You know, technically speaking. Wait, let me check.
So all those people have been trying to call and just frustrated and angry.
Trying, just throwing themselves against the wall like Visigoths done. Hold on, there we go. All right. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of the program. You can also Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype name. That's, if you want to direct messages via Skype, it's Rick Emerson Show. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor herself can be emailed. That is Dawn, D-A-W-N, dawn@rickemerson.com. And last but certainly not least, you can find us in the text box as well at rickemerson.com and so forth and whatnot and on till the break of dawn. Mowing down MCs like I was mowing along. Stuff. And, all right. Coming up later on the day, we get your snuff watch, and I have no idea who died. Okay, so it was a woman. Musician.
No.
Zoologist.
No.
Shoe cobbler.
No.
Gah! Hey, is there a food called a shoe cobbler? There ought to be.
There should be.
I don't know. I don't know what
would
be in it.
It would probably be made of shoes, though, so it wouldn't be very tasty.
Yeah, but I mean, well, okay. I'll have to send that one back to the shop. That idea left my head before it was fully baked. Mm. That was just a, it was like a Cinnabon. It wasn't quite done in the middle there.
And no one wants an undercooked shoe cobbler.
No, it's true. Anyway. It's, it's a woman. Let's see. Wait, one more guess. Politician.
No.
Damn. Snuff watch coming up later on the day. Geek watch coming up today. Also your penis watch. coming up today. So Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, Penis Watch, and so forth. Here's the thing. Someday I long for the day when the Emerson News Network building just towers high over the city. I mean, just from a height of, you know, like 30 or 40 or, you know, 70 stories or something. And every day we will broadcast sort of Orwell style to the people below what will be on that day's glorious program. And we'll just do it with a series of words, and it'll just, like in letters 50 feet high, it'll just say, like, Snuff Geek Penis, just beaming down over the city, bathing the entire metropolis area in sort of a warm glow, just sort of pulsing.
And they'll all just stand below and look up and go, ooh, Penis Watch today.
Or just, what is that? What is the building in New York? It's not the Stock Exchange, but there's that building in New York that's got the wraparound news ticker.
Yeah. We need one of those.
What building is that?
I don't know.
It's not Radio City Music Hall. It's not 30 Rock. I know there's and I don't even know if it's still there anymore, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The one where
you can see it in Times Square.
Yeah, and it's like they always, you know, and they always, you know, they have it in movies that are set in the sort of noir period where I was just like, you know, gangland mobster gunned down, and it's like the wraparound ticker that goes around the corner. We should totally have one of those. I wonder how much it would cost to get like some sort of a banner or a reader board or something that was just on top of the building. Because here's the thing, if you put that on top of this building, you could probably see it. Well, I don't know if you could see it in actual downtown. I wonder what direction we could point that. See, I'm already like, I'm already so far ahead of myself. I'm already past how are we going to get one and why and who's going to pay for it. I'm already on to what direction will be pointed so that most people can actually see that reader board.
By the way, the news ticker is at One Times Square, which is also known as the New York Times building. And that's also where the Jumbotron is.
What direction on the roof would we point that ticker here to sort of inflict that message on the largest number of people?
Well, we do have the Ford building looking down at us. They wouldn't be able to avoid it from their giant windows.
Maybe if we pointed it...
That way, yeah. If we pointed it towards the river.
What direction is that?
That's,
West? Yes.
East.
No, that's west.
Is it?
We're on the east.
Yeah.
That way, all of the traffic that is going home in the afternoon, they would see it.
Yeah. And the trains would see it as they came by, too.
This is the biggest waste of airtime here. There is no reader board. So
no.
We're not going to have one for 5 or 6 weeks at least.
No.
So, all right. Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, Penis Watch are the words that will someday be on the billboard that overlooks the entire thriving metropolis area of Portland, Oregon. Today, they're mere features that will be coming up later on in the program. We'll also have the results of the Select Dawn Taylor's ringtone contest. So this is the ringtone. This is the tone that rings on your phone to indicate that you're receiving a telephone call from me, Rick Emerson.
Indeed.
And so you have selected a winner from all of the many, many thousands of entries you've received. You've actually picked the winner.
Yes.
And have you contacted the winner to tell them
no,
that
I
they've
figured
been selected?
I would announce this this on the air, and then
okay.
I will, this evening, I will email the winner.
All right. So then you will record something of their choosing within some sort of...
Yeah.
Parameters of social decorum to go on their phone or their whatever. It could be their Windows startup. It could be their new mail indicator on their computer.
Right.
It could be wherever it is they need a voice or a sound or a thing.
They could just use it in their like as their alarm for when they wake up in the morning.
That's a great idea. Or just you could record something that they could use as like a white noise generator. It could just be you making a series of gurgling noises.
That wouldn't
be very soothing, I guess. I guess you would just have nightmares of the most horrific variety. If that was like my sharper image thing, if it was like in a babbling brook or rushing rainstorm or like, you know, like a crescendoing rainforest and then just dawn going.
Yeah. And if you're a single man who ever hopes to get laid a second time, you don't want to have to explain to a sleepover guest what that sound is on your white noise machine. Well, there's this radio show I listen to, and there's Dawn Taylor, and I won this contest, and she made a gurgling noise for me, and I listen to it to sleep at night.
And then maybe those are the dulcet tones of Dawn Taylor. Come on, give me some love. Walking Dead, I will talk a little bit about Walking Dead from last night. So you didn't, now what is the deal with you not watching Walking Dead last night? What could you possibly have that's more important than that? Don't say sleep.
No, I have no good excuse. I have no good excuse.
You just
at
failed.
All. I just failed. Right. I got up early this morning. I was working. I watched Boardwalk Empire. And then I had that thing where I had that nagging thing going, there's something else I'm supposed to be doing. And I kept like gathering all my stuff for the day's work and packing everything up and going, I'm missing something. I'm forgetting something. What am I... It just wasn't there.
Did you not install a to-do application on your iPhone?
I did, but
Do you forget to open it? Please tell me that you have a to-do application, but you need a list of things, one of which would be actually open the to-do application.
I never look at it.
That's great.
I have yet to make the mental jump from having
money well
spent. The calendar that I write in to the thing on my phone because I just don't think to look at that thing on my phone because I've spent so many years of having a little thing. Yeah.
You're clearly not using that either, though, is the thing. You're in some weird nether region.
Well, and even if I was using it, I probably wouldn't have written Watch Walking Dead on it because it's something that I've been doing every single week, so I wouldn't need to remind myself of it because why would I forget that?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I did.
This is how it begins. The next thing you won't know your car keys, then you won't recognize relatives, then you'll be soiling yourself here in the studio.
And then later today I'm going to Goodwill and buying all those stupid butter cookie tins so I can give cookie. God, I'm so old.
Lost. Okay. Well, I will, I'll talk a little bit about Walking Dead. It's too bad. I'll talk about it today, and then we'll talk about it more in depth, I guess, tomorrow then, because tomorrow, you know, I got to do the Dexter thing, because I've now reached the point where I no longer even anticipate that I will watch Dexter on Sunday, because there's just not enough time. I mean, that is like, because the thing about it is, it's like Boardwalk Empire and Dexter, those are full-hour shows. It's not like 42 minutes or something. It's a full hour, and then Walking Dead is like 44. So, you know, that's nearly 3 hours right there, and it's just, and I don't even really get started until like 10 or 11, and then I'm doing the show prep and whatever. And it's, you know, and it's the thing where where email never really stops anymore for anyone. I mean, it's not just like it's a me thing. I mean, there's always email coming in. It's like the best you can do is just try to hack out. Email is just some, you know what it is? The email is just like it's like some sort of electronic kudzu, and all you can do is try to cut it down a little bit faster than it grows. I mean, that's it. You're never really going to get rid of it. You're never going to be totally caught up. It's never going to be expunged from your inbox all the way. I can't remember. Let me ask you this right now. How many emails are currently in your primary inbox, you know, for your main email?
Right now, probably 20 or 30. But the thing is, that's also all of my Google alerts that come in at like 10 a.m. every morning.
All right.
And but yeah, no, I go in and I trim back my email. I just get rid of a whole lot of stuff because I get alerts every time somebody comments on something on Facebook. I get an alert to my email.
Oh, I turn all that stuff off first.
So all of that stuff, you know, and so I get a good 150, 200 emails a day or more, and I have to just every day just kind of go look at everything and see what I don't need anymore and then just finally go and delete everything.
Do you do the thing where you, like, once a year, you just delete everything and then you feel guilty about it for a while?
I don't even do that once a year anymore. I do that every couple of days now. Otherwise, honestly, within a week, I'll have, like, over 700 emails in my inbox, and I don't have the time to go through that and see what I'm missing.
I am looking at the inbox for, this is my off-air email, you know, the one that is just, like, you know, the friends and family email, and that's at a mere 367 messages. I'm looking at the inbox now for the show, which is the, you know, the written, not that I'm discouraging people from emailing, I'm just saying, I'm looking at the inbox for rick@rickemerson.com. The message count, and this is, I think, just unread. This is just unread messages, because I think once they've read, I think in Apple Mail, once you've actually opened something, it no longer counts in the little tally off to the side. Just unread messages in my rick@rickemerson.com inbox. That is currently at 16,635 emails. So that's a lot.
Wow, that would make me crazy.
Yeah.
I have to keep it cleared out, or else I don't like it. The number gets over like 100 or 200,
yeah.
And it just makes me feel itchy.
Here's the thing is, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to read and respond to these 636. Seven. Emails. I just, you know, maybe someday, but that day is not today.
Also, I have Gmail hooked up, like now connected on my iPhone, and there's that little red thing that tells you how many messages
right.
are in your inbox.
Yeah, the unread messages.
And that just nags at me,
yeah.
So I have to like keep it cleared out. And if I look down there and it said like 16,000, I would just freak out.
See, you know what I'm that way with? I'm that way with my voicemail. I have to keep my voicemail purged and empty all the time. The email, I think, I just like so long ago gave up on the idea that I would ever, ever, ever be caught up on my email. Like that, I don't even have illusions about that anymore. The thing about my voicemail, though, is I cannot tolerate. Here's what I can't stand. This is like an OCD thing I have with not just my iPhone, but just with phones in general. If there's a missed call, you know, where it's like, you have missed 3 telephone calls. I have to not only see who they were, but then I have to make sure that I press each of them so that, so the number goes down to 0, so mm-hmm. that it doesn't continue to say, like, because all the thing is, I'll forget that I've already checked. And I have this, like, I have, like, the goldfish memory where I will just look down, like, memento guy and constantly go, oh, my God, I've missed two calls, forgetting that they were the two, you know, that I just checked. So I have to get rid of those all the time.
Yeah.
And then I have to go through and purge my voicemail. Even if I know, like, have you ever done this where it's like the, you know, someone calls you and so you call them back right away. Cause, like, you missed the call, but you call them. And then while you are calling them, they are busy leaving a voicemail for you. And they pick up and they go, oh, hey, I was just leaving you a message, John. Hey, the one I said, you know, I wanted to say this, blah, 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 blah. And then later, you see a voicemail sitting in your box, and intellectually, you know that it's just the fragment message they were leaving you when you called them. But it's like, I have to go listen to it so I can delete it. I cannot abide having messages just sitting in my voicemail.
Yeah, I automatically delete every voicemail message as soon as I've heard it. Because it's just, I'm surprised that people don't. Because, I mean,
you know who doesn't do that?
It's done. I mean, it's done. You don't need it anymore.
Here's who doesn't do that. Sarah Dillon doesn't do that. You know the extent to which Sarah Dillon does not delete her voicemail? I can't remember the last year in which I was able to leave her a voicemail because her mailbox is full. Always, all the time, which seems like it may, in fact, be like a strategy unto itself.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that may be the thing. She may be doing like a thing. It's like bricking up the mailbox or something so that just like nobody can leave her. She may have decided she's just sick of having people leave her messages. But if you call and it says like the voicemail box belonging to Sarah Dillon is full, and then it just hangs up. It doesn't even say, like, sorry about that, or, you know, better luck next time, pal. It just, you know, full click, and then it just hangs up, which is sort of great, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't even have, like, I have no idea whether that's a function of, I don't know whether there's a certain number of messages, if it's a certain amount of memory, if it's a certain length of messages, like if they say, look, you've got an hour of message time. But whatever it is, she's past that point, and you can no longer leave messages for her, you know, which, you know, I guess has worked out well for her. Anyway, what was I just saying? Oh, yeah, so, you know, it's all this television to watch. And so I have now, like, just left the idea that I'm ever going to get Dexter watched on Sunday. So Dexter has now become a thing that is a de facto Monday evening show. So I watch it on Monday, talk about it Tuesday. So tomorrow we can watch, or we can talk about Walking Dead. I'll talk about it just a bit later on. It was a great episode. It really was. It was, the thing about Walking Dead, and I'll just say this real briefly, is that that show, a lot of programs like that, they run the risk of having what I call the Incredible Hulk syndrome, the Hulk out problem, which is where you are watching the Incredible Hulk every week and you're just waiting to see when it is that he has the Hulk moment, when he goes nuts and his skin turns green and he bursts through his pants or whatever, because like they know that's what people are tuning in for.
Yeah.
You know, that's the money shot. They know that that's what people are watching to wait for the moment when the zombie comes out of the woods and goes, oogity boogity, and just, you know, eat your femur or something. And shows like that, it's like, you know, it's always a danger of just making the entire thing like you're killing time, basically, until the zombie attack. And Darabont, so far, they're only four episodes in, he's done a really good job of not making the rest of the show feel like they're just sort of playing out the thread until the zombies sort of march in. Because that's, you know, that's a real danger with that. With any show that is focused around a specific and fascinating bad guy or thing, you know, where you're just, you know, you're just kind of looking at your watch going, all right, I don't know, human drama, schmooman drama, you know, when are the zombies attacking? But last night, they, I'll tell you this about Sunday's episode, they get you, they spring it on you, because you don't see it coming. And by saying that, I'm not spoiling, because you still won't know. You'll be watching, you're like, oh, that's just really, oh my God! And then it's, and then suddenly there's, you know, and it's like death is at the door. And this is all true. Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
The world's first rock and roll song has been identified. The TSA has a lot to say about airport gropings. And Netflix is going streaming only and raising prices.
Really? So they're dispatching the DVDs altogether?
Apparently so.
Excellent. All right. So that's all in the way. Snuffwatch, Geekwatch, Peniswatch, the conclusion of Dawn's ringtone contest. We'll talk Walking Dead, a little bit of Boardwalk Empire, and so forth. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program's Thanksgiving Spectacular coming up this Thursday.
Mm.
Greg Nibbler already asked if there was going to be something to drink, as though this studio needs more alcohol.
Of course.
Not enough hooch in here to begin with. I don't think anybody will really be happy until we have like the whole like MASH style still just sort of going on in the corner. So yes, there will be alcohol aplenty. And plus, by the way, I gotta tell you, I get so much food at my house right now. Like an unbelievable amount of food. Hadn't even opened because, you know, Lara's birthday party was this weekend. And I know you were not able to...
No.
You were not able to go, or you didn't go at least.
Yes.
You might have been able to go, but you just didn't. It doesn't matter to me. It wasn't my party.
Look,
I don't care.
I felt horrible about not going, actually. I felt terrible. So my husband has been ill for like a good 2 weeks, and this weekend he was finally just starting to get a little bit better. But I've been, it's just, you know, I've become that person. You know, you see them driving around with children in the back of their SUV, where it's like, you know, they have a job and they have to drive the kid to Gymboree and they make dinner and it's like, and I'm doing crafts and I'm just not that person. I'm not good at being that person. And I've been doing this.
I'm unclear about what person this is. Are you taking children to Gymboree? Are these your children or children you've stolen?
I've been trying to take care of my husband and do my job and clean my house.
I see.
And then it's basically, I think I discovered on Saturday that those three things were the limit of how much I can do. Because on Saturday, it's like, Laura has this party, and she sent out the invite, and I was like really looking forward to it. And it was like, oh, and bring food from one of the countries I've visited. And so I'm like, crap, what am I going to do? So I thought, okay.
Now, to be fair, she didn't spring that on anybody.
No.
It wasn't like a last-minute sort of, you know.
No, it wasn't. But I spent, like, you know, the day before, I had figured out what I was
going to
do.
What were you going to? In some alternate reality, what food did you bring to the party?
I may still make it because I still have it half-made at home. I was making little potato and chorizo sausage empanadas.
Oh.
And so I needed real, honest-to-God chorizo, not the...
Not spray chorizo.
Well, there's this admittedly really delicious Mexican pork chorizo that you can buy at just the regular grocery store. But it's more a flavoring ingredient for something else because it's just really flavorful and really greasy.
Yeah, Señor Duran would have called a little BS on that. He would have.
Yeah, and it is delicious, but it's not real what you want. So I had to go to Whole Foods. And there were like 7 million people there shopping for Thanksgiving, so I had to do that, and just to get my damn chorizo. And then I left, and then I'd been like taking care of Patrick and going and getting him soup and doing stuff. And I had to clean the house because I was borrowing a friend's car, and he was coming over, and I didn't want him to know what like a mess my house has been. So I had to clean my house, and so then he came. Then I had to drive him home to Milwaukee because I'm borrowing his car for a week. Then I came back. Then I start making the empanadas, and I realize I'm running out of time. If I want to, like, color my hair, do my nails, any of that stuff, which I needed to do at least for the next day, because on Sunday we had that photo shoot, but I was going to do it on Saturday, so it was done for the party. And then I'm, like, cooking up chorizo, and I'm doing stuff, and I started realizing, I'm running out of time. It was, like, 3:30, 4 o'clock, and the party started at 7.
So you're starting to hear that tick, 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 tick.
And I just basically lost it. And Patrick came limping into the kitchen in his pajamas, was like, well, just, you know, you don't have to do it. I'm like, yes, I do. Yes, I do. There's going to be all these food people there, and they have food, and I have to have good food because I can't be a failure. And he's like, and I'm like, I'm so tired. And I realized I was just exhausted. And I'm just going, I'm so tired. And Patrick goes, you don't have to go to the party. I'm like, I do. I do have to go. And it was like, and I realized that I was just pushing myself way too hard. And it decided that if I didn't go to Lara's party and if I didn't bring something that was perfect, that meant I was a failure as a human being. And finally, when Patrick explained, no, you really don't. Plus, I think I was kind of fighting off a little bit of a cold as well. So I just went, fuck it. Oh, I'm sorry. I just swore.
Wow.
And I ended up going in and laying down, and I just passed out, and I slept for 4 hours straight.
Okay, then. So we missed having you, like, melt down in front of everybody at the party, which would have been entertaining.
Right.
All right.
But I still have... partially made empanadas at home.
You should bring those on Thursday.
I'll bring them on Thursday.
That's really, no. So, yeah, that's how you can make it up. I don't care about Laura. You can make it up to Big Daddy Rick by bringing those in so we can eat those. Well, if it makes you feel any better, so my wife's birthday is, Jesus, tomorrow. I've purchased something.
No.
No. No, of course not.
Of course
hi? No,
it.
No.
Do you know what you're going to give her?
No, but to be fair, though, I've been warning her for like 2 weeks. That's what I've done this year. Last year I had something really, really great. You know, it's a mark of me and my brain, though, that I just totally forget about it again until today when you mentioned it. Because her birthday party was this last Saturday. So last year, you know, I got her the, this sounds really dumb, unless you're us, in which case it's awesome. I got her the oil, you know, the painting of Max and Philo. I got
a
painting of the dogs, which she thought was great. And I started telling her 2 weeks ago, I'm like, baby, look, you know, I got you the painting of Max and Philo last year, and, I don't think that can be topped. I'm telling you right now, I'll work at it. I mean, I'll try to come up with something. But I don't want to get you something that's just a token gift. I don't want to get you something just for the sake of doing, because then it makes it sound as though I'm being considerate by not buying something.
And have you indeed tried to come up with anything?
I have.
Awesome?
I mean, not that hard or that often. I mean, I haven't put like a lot of effort toward it or anything. But here's the great thing about it. A, I got her a great gift last year. B, I've been telling her for like 2 weeks, I don't really know what I can do that can exceed this fantastic, you know, because the dogs are always right there in the room. And I go, look at how cute they are. Look at this great painting of them. What could I ever get that's better than the dogs? And it's like, because we're dog parents, she kind of has to say, like, nothing. And I say, that's right. So I don't want to get you something that, you know, I don't want to go get you a Whitman sampler or something that's just, you know, like a lame last minute. That'd be tacky. That would be insulting to you as, you know, as my beloved. So I've just been saying for weeks, I'm like, so, you know, realize that the 23rd, I may not have found the perfect thing yet. And here's why I can get away with that. I can get away with that this year because I swear to Christ, she just spent like, she just blew like the equivalent of most countries' like gross national product like on her trip to Turkey and Spain.
Oh, there's that, yes.
That's the thing. She went to, and I haven't even mentioned this because it was only for like 3 days. She went to Turkey and Spain and Italy. I leave Italy out of the equation because she was only there for like less than a week or something. So she just went to, she went to two continents and three countries for 5 weeks. And I mean, here's the thing. I don't mean to sound like a, you know, like the typical guy talking about his wife and the whatever. I try so hard not to put off looking at bills and looking at whatever, but it's like that one of the credit cards, like the Amex or whatever, has just been sitting there. And I've just been looking at it like some sort of a bomb where I don't know which wire to cut. I'm just so afraid to open it for fear of what it's going to say. So it's going to be a lean Christmas, I think, at the Emerson household.
Can you just hand her the envelope and say, here, you spent all this money, you pay this bill?
But the great thing about it is, though, is by stepping up and, you know, like handling, you know, you don't just, you know, not like a hand, like I'm going to be paying it single-handedly or whatever, but by not shirking my responsibility as, you know, handling part of the bills. Then it's like I don't have to lay on the guilt. It lays itself on. Then it's like a passive application of guilt. Because, then, you know, because I haven't mentioned this.
You can sit in the room and open the bill and then just
exhale,
sigh deeply.
Well, I guess I could sell some things like my bone marrow maybe, or a foot. One of the dogs perhaps. Maybe a gypsy would like to buy Philo. See, I haven't mentioned anything about how much your trip cost. I haven't said anything about it. I haven't made observation one about how much money she spent on her trip. And see, by not mentioning it, then it looms even larger in the room like an unspoken elephant. And so I feel like she can't really pile on that much. So, I have a few ideas, but I have been telling her for weeks. I'm like, if your birthday comes and goes, and I don't have like the perfect thing, like you just got to know that that's coming. So I've been prepping her for that. So, you know, we'll see. And I'll take her out to dinner and, you know, whatever. She had a great party just this past Saturday. So that does like so much of the work for me because she had a great social experience. I was there. I was my charming self. I was.
You actually talked to people.
I was funny. I was social.
You didn't stand in a corner.
I didn't
the whole time.
Hide in a corner. I actually engaged with people and pretended. Can I just tell you this? I allowed myself. This, by the way, gets me so many points with my wife, and then we have to get away with some stuff here. But this, there are photographs of this, which I'm not even like, I'm not going to say I'm not embarrassed. They're horrible photographs, but what are you going to do? I mean, they're probably on Facebook as we speak now, where Aaron's wife Jen was there, and you know she does the look. I'm not passing judgment. I'm passing a little bit of judgment, but you know, here's a thing that I don't get, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Whatever, to each her own. Here's the thing I don't get. I don't get the whole, even the phrase makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't get the whole belly dancing thing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. But like the thing Jen does, and it's, you know, fine. Have at it. It's the thing I just don't, you know. It's just I just lack the receptor for that. I'm not opposed to it. I'm indifferent to it. But at one point, they decided that everybody was drunk, and they were all sufficiently drunk that they decided that the most hilarious thing would be to take the belly, you know, because you know how it is. It's like a belt of
bells and
bells and like things. It's but like you're wearing drapes with coins hung on them that you have around your waist. So they decided the most hilarious thing would be to like drape these around Rick. So they dragged me into the living room. And I didn't know why. And the next thing I know, it's like the girls are there and they're like stringing me. It's like I'm O. Tannenbaum. And they're just stringing me with metal tinsel.
So basically you're like the little brother at the girls' sleepover party.
Doing my hair. Yes, exactly. Like I'm a big Barbie head and they're going to put rouge on me. So there's a photograph floating around of Scott Daly and me. and we are wearing like belly dancing bells or whatever.
And one of you,
I didn't dance.
Is cold sober.
Yeah, I didn't dance.
And I have a feeling it was not Scott Daly.
Scott Daly did a little gyrating. I struck a pose. They took a photograph. I took them off and I left. So I was. I allowed myself to be. I was social. I was polite. I was charming. And I allowed myself to be draped in belly dancing wear on Saturday. So I've done so much, really, for her already, for her birthday, that it's like the gift would be superfluous at this point.
And when we saw each other yesterday, you did tell me that it probably wouldn't have been good for my mental state if I'd shown up with my empanadas anyway, because I would have been horribly shamed by the many, many insanely foodie things, including Siegfried's.
It was just one of those parties where everybody shows up bringing, like, something that, like, you know, that, where it's like they were at home with, like, a mortar and a pestle and, like, one of those weird, like, one of those wheels that a slave pushes around in a thing to, you know, to, like, grind corn for the king or whatever. You know, just, like, make all this is just a, you know what Lara has? Lara has a circle of friends. And you know what? And you know this. You're a woman. The whole, like, oh, this old thing, that, you know, where it's like some outfit that they've spent like months putting together for the party, just so they can go like, oh, it's just something I threw together. And her friends are the culinary equivalent of that, where it's like you know, somebody will make like the most succulent dessert you've ever had in your life. It's just the most fantastic meal, and they'll go, oh, this is just I threw a few things together with some oil and just, you know, whipped it up with some, you know, and I cooked it for a couple. It's fine. It's nothing. I can. This is just no. I didn't have it. It's what I had in the cupboard.
You know, I've never been able to do that. It's like if something was genuinely kind of easy to do, I'm like, no, it really wasn't that hard. But if something really was a huge production, I'm like, oh yeah, no, this was the hugest pain in the ass.
Took me all week.
So that's been half a day putting this crap together.
Goddamn Siegfried. You know, I love. He's a great guy, but Siegfried, and he wasn't really doing it to be showy. I think he was running late. So like we go to the party and it's like, you know, you can, like, I don't really throw a lot of parties, but if you ever, like, you know, like, you know, guys get together like for poker or whatever, and it's just like a half empty bag of chips that are all broken and like some chicken fingers, and that's it. But this is, it's like, it's, you know, like all of these different foods from like Turkey and Spain and like Iberian ham and like thinly shaved this and like essence of that and pickled something or other and like 75 different kinds of olives and like date filled almond crusted sugar cookies, and just like, and it was all really great. And then Siegfried shows up at the door, and he comes in and he's holding a paella pan filled with a bunch of bags of ingredients that he's brought from his, like, you know, plushly appointed houseboat or whatever. And he's like, hey, so, like, I'm running, like, kind of late. Like, do you have, like a stove with, like, some burners? Because I just want to, like, whip up a little paella. And it was just like a parody of a guy shaming all the other guys. You know, meanwhile, Scott Daly's vomiting on himself in a back room and Aaron Duran's passing out from a hookah overdose. You know, and, you know, Siegfried's in the kitchen with, like, a bottle of wine or something, pouring it into a paella pan and, you know, entertaining all of the lady folk.
Yeah, because, and that is insanely
Jesus.
Hot,
yeah.
By the way. I will say that, that is, for the ladies, that is so hot when a nice-looking man knows how to cook.
Yeah, and he's a good-looking guy, and he's dressed well, and he's, you know, and he's got, like, a cool, sexy career because, you know, he does the movie shoots, and he was, like, you know, and he's, like, as dorky as it sounds, I mean, this, you know, it's not like a... Not like anybody here is really hot for the Jersey Shore cast, but, you know, they were in town and, like, his job was to film them. So it's like he's, you know, he spent a couple of days, like, following these people who are, for better or worse, legitimate TV stars around. And he was, you know, he doesn't brag about it, but he's like, well, I was, like, following the Jersey Shore guys around. But, you know, but then I ducked over here so I could make paella for the ladies, you know. And it was, and he's not trying to be a dick about it. He just is like, you know, he's just one of those guys who's just, like, effortlessly cool. You know, it's you know, Jesus. Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know what I'm talking about. But if it makes you, final thing, and then we'll get to the, if it makes you feel any better about having your, like, meltdown and being exhausted on Saturday. So, Lara was gone for a lot of Saturday with Aaron's wife, Jen, and whatever. They were, like, getting ready for the party. I slept really badly Friday night into Saturday. And I was just tossing and turning. So, I got up at, like, 6:30 in the morning and just went out and, like, I don't know, like, I don't know, read the news or whatever, and, you know, did something or folded laundry or something lame. And then I went back to bed at 7:30 Saturday morning. This is the day of Lara's party, which starts at 7. Her party started at 7 p.m. Saturday night. So I couldn't sleep Friday night. So I just, Saturday morning, I get up and I go back to bed at like 7:30 in the morning. She gets up to go over and start getting ready for the party at like 9 a.m. She came home at 5:45 and I was actually still asleep. Me and both the dogs, who didn't bother to wake me up. They were asleep. Well, the dogs and I both slept for, what is that, 10 hours?
Yeah.
So we slept all the way through the day to like 5:45.
Dogs, I'm sure the dogs were just in heaven.
Oh, yeah. And she opened.
Yeah, we're all just sleeping.
And it was that thing where she opens the bedroom door, and it's all dark and cozy in the bedroom, but it's like It's brightly lit in the house. So she opens the bedroom door, so it's suddenly very bright, and I can't see anything except her black silhouette in the this cube of terrifying light in the door, which is like, why are you still in bed? I'm like, I don't know. What day is it? You know. So you and I both had a similar kind of Saturday, but you just didn't have somebody there, you know, like with a verbal taser getting you out of bed for the party.
Jesus.
All right. Snuff Watch, Keek Watch, Penis Watch, all of that coming up. Walking Dead, Boardwalk Empire, Dawn's Ringtone Contest, and more. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, made possible in part by Castalia Language Center. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com, where you can learn to speak conversational Spanish by speaking Spanish conversationally, which, by the way, another great Siegfried thing. You know, this is another reason why he's, you know, better than, like, it's just like, you know, and again, the only saving grace is that he's such a cool guy, and he doesn't do it intentionally, but it's like the whole trip is centered around Lara's, you know, or the whole party is centered around her recent trip. And Siegfried, of course, he's one of those guys who's been everywhere. You know, like he was talking to me, like, well, you know, I went to see the Terracotta Warriors in Beijing, and so, you know, like, that was pretty cool, you know. But then he balances it by saying that he went to Italy to stay in some, in Rome, to stay in some courthouse square somewhere, some courtyard, simply because that's where they filmed part of Hudson Hawk. And he's like, and I love Hudson Hawk, so, like, I went to this courtyard in Rome where, like, you can stay there, and you're like, you can see one of the rooms where they filmed it. So he's, like, binned at, like, every country on Earth, you know, like, his family owns, like, a castle on the shores of Loch Ness or some crap. Anyway, but if you want to be more cultured and sophisticated, perhaps speak the language of love, you can go to PortlandSpanish.com, find out more about Castalia Language Center. There's Clara Grebel. She's the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center, where they learn learn you. That's what they do. They give you the learning. You can learn to speak conversational Spanish by speaking Spanish conversationally. You're not going to have to just memorize it and you know, get it by rote. They actually teach it to you the way that kids learn it, the way you learn it from birth, the way you learn it if you're doing it immersion style. That's PortlandSpanish.com. Class sizes of no more than 8 students. You get near individualized attention. That is PortlandSpanish.com. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
In a statement on Sunday, Transportation Security Administration Chief John Pistoli promised to make airport screenings as minimally invasive as possible.
Did you see that thing on Drudge of them, like, the kid with his shirt off?
No.
I'll post it. I'll put it in the visual aids. I'm sorry, I don't mean to rub it. It's a thing that's something on Drudge. It's one of the, you know, it's like somebody took it on their iPhone or whatever. And it's of a boy who I would say is probably 7 or 8 years of age. And they actually have him... I mean, it doesn't look
I read about this. I didn't see the picture, but I did hear about this.
I mean, it's not like, it doesn't look like they're molesting him or anything. But they do have him stripped to the waist.
Yeah.
I mean, his shirt is off, and it's just weird. It's creepy. It's completely freaking creepy.
Yeah, it was hard to pick which stories to do about the TSA today, because there are so many.
So weird.
Everybody's talking about it right now. But anyway, John Pasoli said he understands the concerns of people who consider the methods invasive.
Which cut is this?
Two.
Looking at that and seeing if there is any basis or any way that we can modify and yet provide that level of security that everybody wants.
And so is he the actual head of the – what is he?
He's the TSA administration – he's the TSA chief.
All right. So I wonder if he – I wonder if that actually means – it sounds dumb, but I wonder if that means he runs the whole thing, because that's got to be a thankless job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I'm – you know, like, I think it's okay that they just poke you and prod you and have you strip off your clothing or whatever. At the same time – if you are just some guy who just has it as, you know, as they say, as a J-O-B, if you're just some guy who works for the TSA because it's like you got to eat, it's just got to be the worst thing. You just must wake up in the morning and just want to kill yourself. I mean, just going to, you know, just like a whole day of having to touch guys' junk and then knowing that, like, at any moment one of them might deck you in the chops.
Well, Pistoli explains why gloved screeners are putting their hands inside passengers' pants.
I wonder what – have you heard this? You haven't heard this soundbite.
No.
What explanation do you suppose he gives for this? Because really, what explanation could you give? What do you suppose – and I haven't really heard this. I think I mentioned I tried to listen to this. I tried to load it without listening to it. What explanation do you suppose he gives for why they have to, quote, put their hands in your pants?
I can't imagine why – I don't know how he would say it. That's my thing. I can't – literally cannot imagine how – I mean, I guess the idea is you could have something – tucked in there behind your testicles or something. I don't know.
But could you really?
Probably not. I don't know.
I mean, I hate to be all like Howard Stern about this, but I almost feel like we need to do some sort of experiment where we just see, like, we just bring a guy in and just see what he can hide behind his testicles.
How many things he can hide in
Seriously,
his crotch.
It'd be like, you know, it'd be like a terrible game show, like, what can you hide behind your testicles? And just, like, the guy who can hide the most stuff behind his testicles wins.
Part of it, I guess, would depend on the size of your testicles.
I guess. I mean, you know, maybe I should just sell that idea to KUFO instead. What can you hide behind your sack? Whose junk am I touching?
So this is Pistoli explaining why TSA are groping people.
Those gloves will then be tested for explosive trace residue. So it's not simply a matter of physically determining whether there's something in the belt or in the waistband, but is there some explosive trace residue that can be picked up and determined, again, to prevent somebody from getting on a plane like Abdul Muttalib did on Christmas Day.
No, that doesn't work.
No, that's a fail.
No.
Especially because... So what is it? And I haven't gone through. See, I don't even know now. Is this a thing they're doing it at PDX? Because they don't have the body scan thing here. But are they doing like the glove on your junk thing?
I don't know. But they're not. They're not feeling people's testicles and then running every pair of gloves through some kind of analysis.
See, that's my thing. Is like I would say that they're probably not. Now I don't know, but it seems unlikely that they're. Rubbing your – it just sounds so retarded to say – rubbing your junk and then scanning the gloves. Because why wouldn't – I mean, it seems like they would then just scan your junk. They'd just skip the middleman. They obviously have no shame. So, they don't care about being awkward or uncomfortable. So they would just scan your business to begin with. Why would they even bother with the glove?
I don't know.
All right.
A few hours after this press conference – Pistoli released another statement to the blog Politico, suggesting that the TSA might be willing to change its mind. He said, "We are constantly evaluating and adapting our security measures, and as we have said from the beginning, we are seeking to strike the right balance between privacy and security."
Okay.
He wanted to remind the public that less than 1 year ago, a suicide bomber with explosives in his underwear tried to bring down a plane over Detroit.
By the way, didn't he, like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but did that guy make it onto the plane or not?
I don't know.
All right. Well, hold on. Let's see. Okay, so that is up at rickemerson.com/pictures. You go to Visual Aids for November 22nd, 2010, and there's a little video there. It's 38 seconds long, and you can see – it's so creepy. You can see the TSA, like, taking the shirt off this, like, 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Just so unbelievable.
There's another video, I think it is, of a self-proclaimed pornographer opting – for the TSA
I saw that.
Groping.
Yeah, no, he took
his see-through underwear.
He took his pants off.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, then they arrested him. They actually arrested him after taking, if this is the same guy I read about on Drudge this morning, they said, "Okay, we need to pat you down." He's like, no, I'll just take off my clothes. And he just undressed, and then they arrested him for that.
There's also a report on Gawker of a breast cancer survivor who was forced to remove a prosthetic breast, and a bladder cancer survivor whose urostomy bag exploded during a pat down.
Yes, he ended up covered in urine and weeping, Don. So there you go. That's how you want to end your holidays, you know? Some people like to end it tan and relaxed. I like to end it covered in my own waste and crying uncontrollably.
We have some sound of a woman at Washington's Reagan National Airport who said she'd prefer it if she and her kids went through body scanners as opposed to being groped by TSA agents.
Which cut is
this? CSA 3.
Probably because I'd prefer them not to be touched by strangers, which I think many parents feel that way.
That's got to be weird, too. It's like there's so much hyperbole. I'm not saying that it's like they're sexually assaulting your kids. Everybody's gone right to the whole, like, it's a sexual assault.
Yeah.
And, it seems weird. But it's still got to be a strange – it's got to be a weird, helpless feeling as a parent. There's, like, some kid who has been told his whole life, by the way, that strangers aren't allowed to, like, touch your swimsuit area. And it's like you're the parents and they're going, well, I guess it's the government, so have at it, you know?
I honestly believe that that's one of the reasons why I have my phobia about clowns. Is when I was a little kid, like a lot of children, I was told repeatedly that strangers were to be feared and avoided. Don't talk to strangers unless it's somebody mommy and daddy know. Don't talk to strangers. Don't let them touch you. Don't go anywhere. And then we go to some freaking carnival and there's a clown. And my mom's like, sit on the clown's lap. We'll take a picture. I'm like, and now suddenly there's some greasy, sweaty stranger in clown makeup with his hands all over me.
Like some like painted face Shriner reeking of gin.
It's no wonder they terrify me.
Totally.
But yeah, so this woman at Washington's Reagan Airport says she'd rather be safe than sorry.
Safety of everyone. You have to find out what people have on them.
Okay. What? And in them, probably, at some point.
Well, appearing on Face the Nation this weekend, Hillary Clinton said that if given the option of getting a pat-down, she'd avoid it. No, I mean, who would, she said. But despite the widely publicized outcry over new pat-down protocols that began earlier this month, officials say that 80% of the public approves of the body scanners and only 1% of passengers opted for pat-downs.
That's one of those things that you just – I don't even – I mean – I know I'm being that guy, but I just instinctively disbelieve that. I don't care. I don't care where they claim they got that from or who they surveyed. That's just not accurate.
Well, and also, it depends on how they ask the question, too. If you ask the question, which would you prefer, to walk through a full body scanner where you'll be seen by somebody who's in a completely different room and won't identify you, or have a TSA agent stick his hand in your pants?
Yeah.
Which would you prefer? 80% said they'd prefer the scanner.
Yeah, well, it's a push pull where obviously just the way that they're the way that they're phrasing the question. By the way,
so do you think this may actually be part of why this is happening? That it is basically a TSA, I don't want to say plot.
Well, yeah, because
it's TSA plan. It's like, you know, if they make a big deal, if they knew that there would be public outcry about the groping. And that's going to push public approval of the body scanners?
I don't think they planned it that way, but I think that probably what they have is they have a list of – they probably had, like when they first started the TSA – because it's weird to think that the TSA actually – I don't think the TSA existed until after 9/11. I mean, there was security. There was airline security. And now that I think about it, what organization was that? Because there was airline security. There was an airline security like guy before that would search you. You had an X-ray you'd walk through or whatever. So, what organization did we just scrap one organization and start a new one?
I don't know for sure, but I think that airports handled their own security, and if there was any kind of an issue that needed to be addressed, that was federal marshals.
Because I think they can actually well, whatever. Anyway, so I imagine what happened is that they just have a list that they drew up 10 years ago. Of everything they could do to search people. They go, well, we got the X-ray. We got the blowy thing. We got the glove on your junk. We got the body scan. We got the, you know, whatever, like an MRI. We got a dog that, you know, comes up and sniffs you, whatever. They have a whole list of those things. They go, well, we'll just go with the number one and number four. And then that's what they've been doing. So they probably didn't plan this whole thing. But as soon as there was a ruckus about the body scan, the guy probably said, hey, go back to that big list we made back in 2001. What's the worst thing on there? What's the one that we didn't go with because it was so awful? Hand on your junk. Yeah, let's start doing that. Because now it's like swinging two bats in the on-deck circle, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like suddenly the other thing doesn't seem so bad anymore if the other thing is a guy like giving you the jelly finger or whatever. So
the jelly finger?
You know what I'm talking about, baby.
Oh,
Saturday night already.
Oh. Well, anyway, God. TSA Chief John Pistoli did leave the door open for some changes down the road. This would be Pistoli 1.
Bottom line is everybody wants to arrive safely at their destination. So how can we work with the traveling public in partnership to assure that?
All right.
And with the traveling Wilburys.
Yes.
What do they think about all of this?
Wait, hold on a second. I'm not sure if that
works.
Bottom
line is everybody wants to arrive safely at their destination. So how can we work with the traveling public in partnership to assure that?
Okay. No, that works. I can see that. All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Not all passengers are upset about the screening procedures. This woman thinks they are necessary methods.
That's just a TSA 1.
With the past, people going through with things on their
body. But with the past and all.
I'd rather be safe than sorry.
A stitch in time saves 9.
And this passenger isn't crazy about the new methods, but prefers one over the other.
I'm going to opt for the pat-down. It can't be any more intrusive than the full body scan and the image they get.
Wait. Okay, it sounds like she's saying two different things. She's what? What is the setup for this?
She prefers the pat-down.
I'm going to opt for the pat-down. It can't be any more intrusive than the full body scan and the image they get.
Oh, I think she's going to find out almost immediately that she's wrong about that.
Basically, your choice is, do you want some stranger to see you kind of, sort of, naked? Some stranger who's apparently in a completely different room and isn't going to be able to identify you personally, or do you want some stranger putting their hands all over you?
Well, they say they
won't
be able to.
Which of those sounds worse?
They say they won't be able to identify you personally, but if it was just some schmo, they can probably because it's like, you know, as you're going through, the guy's looking at your passport, so they probably, it wouldn't be, in other words, if they wanted to identify you and link you to the photo, that wouldn't be that hard because as you're going through, the guy's looking at your passport. But on the other hand, if you're anybody who has some public profile, if you're, you know, if you are Hillary Clinton or if you're Justin Bieber, let's say, and you're some TSA guy who's been longing to stare at Justin Bieber in the altogether, I mean,
I suppose it's possible that the TSA agents at the gate could, I guess,
hey, Justin Bieber's coming through.
Radio the guy in the next room or whatever, and go, okay, the third person coming through in the next one. That's gonna be Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, well, because there was that thing that came out last week, and it was a different kind of scanner, but it was a thing. Was it like in Washington D.C. or something where it was like, I don't know, there was like 200 like scanned photos of travelers that were leaked onto the internet, which like gives the lie to the whole thing that they're not saved, which we all sort of knew was a lie. So let me ask you this, Dawn Taylor. So then which would you take? You take the grope or you take the stare? You take the scan or you take the finger?
If I travel so rarely that I would probably take the scan. If I traveled...
Like if you had to fly next week.
If I had to... Yeah, I would probably take the scan because I don't care.
Because you figure some guy probably doesn't, you know.
And seriously, if I'm inflicting, you know, my fat, pudgy rolls on some stranger, it's like, fine. Make him earn his minimum wage. What the hell?
I like your spunk.
But the thing is, if I was traveling, if I traveled often, if I traveled weekly or something, I would probably go for the pat-downs because of the radiation. I wouldn't want to be exposed to the radiation on a regular basis.
I see. And that's like, I get that that's true in the abstract. I assume that I've just got so much cancer already that like, for me, for the average person, if you're probably healthy, that's probably a concern. For me, I just figure that I've got so much radiation in me anyway. Like it doesn't, seriously, they've got... What was the thing they found last week? Now it's not just radioactive rabbits in my hometown. What was the new thing they found?
Mice.
There you go. Radioactive goddamn mice.
But the thing is, every time I fly, I have to go through all those procedures anyway. I mean, I have ever since I got my hip replaced. You know,
because you beep when you go
through?
Yeah, because
I beep and, you know, you say to them, I have titanium hips. And they go, yeah, okay, whatever. But they're not going to take your word for it. So I have to go to the special little area of shame and, you know, take my shoes off and keep my shoes off and stand there and wait for somebody to come over and feel me up and down the insides of my thighs and all over and touch my entire body. And it's like, it's, you know, it's not the greatest feeling in the world to have some stranger, you know, patting you down. But, you know, it's honestly, as a female, it's certainly not as bad as having like a gynecological exam.
Well, I suppose.
I mean, I've been through worse.
I guess, yeah, the bar is set pretty high, you know, for women, for what seems like an invasive touching by a stranger. Have you had the thing where they pull you out and they go through your bag? Where they go,
yes.
you, and you. I had that for the first time last year where they just picked me randomly and then they just took everything out of my bag and then shoved it back in, you know, badly.
I had that the first time that happened to me. I was coming back from working at the Renaissance Fair in California for the weekend because in my carry-on bag I had my my pewter tankard. And it just looked like a big
piece of metal.
It was just a big metal,
you
know, tube, a big metal spherical thing that the X-ray couldn't see through. So it was like, and what's this, ma'am?
I said,
it's a pewter tankard with the University of Irvine aardvark on it.
It's been so tempting so many times to get like a big cube of lead. And just that doesn't open like it's not a box or something. It's just like a cube of lead and just take it through. You know, something that looks dangerous that isn't, and just go, what's this? It's a cube of lead, you know, and then look real shifty-eyed, like kind of squint a lot and kind of like go nervously from foot to foot.
Yeah, but that's inviting, you know, getting taken to the back room and getting that jelly finger you were talking
about.
Yeah,
I suppose. But here's the thing. So I got to fly. We're going to be here for Thanksgiving and then we're going to be here for Christmas, but I'm actually going to be gone. We should mention this. I told you about this. I'm going to be gone the 13th of December, which is a Monday. I'm flying back. So I get to go to Utah. So I'll be going to Utah Friday, the whatever that is, the 10th or whatever. And then I'll be back Monday afternoon, but too late to do the show and actually late enough that I actually couldn't even do it like via Skype or whatever, which is almost too bad because I was looking forward to taking like radio equipment with me in my bag. You know, it's like a control board and a microphone and like lots of wire. We won't be here on Monday the 13th, or I won't be here anyway. And we'll kind of figure out, you know, we'll announce like in the next few weeks what we're going to do that day. But so I'm going to be flying from here to Utah. And, you know, they don't care about civil liberties in Utah. Utah's the weirdest place. I have never lived in a place where they hate the government more and yet love the government at the same time. I mean, it's like because they're all just so rabidly conservative and Republican. and, you know, very, you know, they love restrictions on like booze and drugs and hooking and polygamy and pornography and whatever. Yet at the same time, they just loathe the government because Utah is a whole state filled with like polygamists who flout the law and conspiracy theorists, and to be fair, the Mormons were, you know, people that were very much persecuted by the government. So they have this weird take on the government there and on intrusion. But I got to look up because I have no idea if they do any of this stuff at the Salt Lake City airport or not. But it's not like it would surprise me or anything. So I may actually be faced with like the finger or the scan, which is like a Lady and the Tiger sort of a thing, a choice when I'm leaving Salt Lake City airport. I have no idea. That might in fact happen. Somebody wants it known that, quote, mm-hmm. I often get explosive underwear after chicken vindaloo. Thank you, sir. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our penis watch.
All right, here's your – this whole thing wasn't like a big crotch watch just now?
Crotch watch.
All right, here's your penis watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Bow, bow, bow. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
What if you could just get like a – I don't know if normal paint would do this. I wonder if you could get like some sort of a paint that had like, you know, like a glittery sort of like a metallic paint, yeah. And then just paint like a big like FU on your chest when you went through the scan.
I think you could do
that. You know, like just suck it or something.
Okay.
Your mom's a whore, you know, just like written right across my right, you know, right above my nipples. I'm sorry. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A Bulgarian from Pazarchik, a city in the southeast of the capital, Sofia, has been arrested after committing a long list of crimes while under the influence of drugs. Angel Atanasov was bored and decided with a friend to take some unspecified drugs. According to police reports, once the drugs kicked in, the Bulgarian male amputated a part of his penis, and when his father came in to see what was happening, he cut off a piece of his father's ear. He then ran into the road, partially naked and bleeding, where he jumped into a car owned by a young woman who was unloading the trunk and drove off.
A part of his penis.
Yes.
Does it specify the...
No. That's just what it said in the police report. He amputated a part of his penis.
I wonder if it was lengthways or crossways.
Don't know.
Okay.
He was still able to run around and bleed, though. So he stole this woman's car. Then he ran a red light and crashed into a motorcycle before he jumped out of the car and ran to a nearby farm where he tried to batter down the door. When that failed, he ran to the back of the house and tried to set fire to a haystack. He then stabbed a lamb to death before stripping off his remaining clothes and stealing an axe, which he then ran off with.
Is this all
naked.
In one day? This isn't like a
yes.
series of... This isn't over the course of his life.
No, this is all, you know...
One long...
Took the drugs, cut up the penis... Cut his dad's ear, stole a car, crashed into a motorcycle, ran to a farm, set fire to a haystack, stabbed a lamb to death, and stole an axe. And then when the police were closing in, he climbed up a high-voltage cable and was blasted with several thousand volts. And he is now in intensive care.
I'm picturing this like some sort of like a demonic family circus where there's like the little dotted line showing what Jeffy did that day while mom and dad were at work. And like, you know, him and Ida No are like busy like, you know, killing a goat and then, you know, cutting off somebody's junk and whatever.
Yes.
Jesus. You know, you got to almost admire the fact that he cut off a piece of his penis and then was able to drive a car later. You figure that's a lot of moving of your pelvis and legs and shifting and so forth.
Especially when you're mostly naked.
Yeah.
Which means, considering the cutting of the penis, he probably wasn't wearing pants.
Jesus.
So everything's flopping around and bleeding.
Yes, yes. And that's the other thing. Is like, and he you know, the blood loss was not sufficient to kill him.
I wish they had specified what kind of drugs he had taken, because...
you could avoid those?
Yeah.
Don't take these.
Yeah, because whatever it is, he took too many or the wrong combination or something, because...
Well, it's like whenever they talk about, you know, like the Diane Linkletters of the world where like they took LSD and then they thought they could fly and they, you know, and it's like then you instinctively disbelieve that. You think, well, that's just crap. No one does that. But then, you know, it's like just last week, I think this will air this coming Sunday, I interviewed this guy, Mark Christensen, who wrote this Ken Kesey book. And he talked about, you know, hanging out with Kesey and taking acid. And he said flat out, he said that he had that exact experience where he was over at a friend's house or something, and they were up in somebody's apartment building, and he, like, his friend literally physically had to restrain him from jumping off a balcony after he took acid. And I said, really? I said, you're not just, like, using that as, like, a catch-all? And he's like, no. He's like, I literally tried to go off the balcony. And so I don't even know So I'm just trying to figure out what kind of drug, unless you thought your penis was evil somehow, which it might be, or the cause of your problems, which it probably is, you know. But then why would you cut off just a part of it?
I don't know.
You figure if your penis is causing you, you know, is the source of your difficulties in life, you get rid of the whole thing.
Well, maybe he was going to get rid of the whole thing.
And then he went, oh, that hurt.
Yeah. And so he stopped halfway.
Ow, no.
So, no,
ow.
I need to go set something on fire now.
Hey, were you – I need to go kill a sheep. Hey, were you here when Greg stuck the electrical prongs in his eye on Friday?
No.
Really?
You were gone by then?
Yeah. No,
oh,
I
it was
missed
awesome.
That entirely.
It was not less awesome for Greg.
Why would he do that?
Well, I don't – there were no sheep around. He was like plugging in. He went to plug in his laptop or something. I put up a – this is where I love Twitter – and my iPhone, because I was able to instantly like send a Twitter message about this. So he's like getting his laptop out of his bag, and you've got the cord you plug into the wall or whatever. And it was that thing of like he was pulling it all out at once, all out of his bag, like the laptop and the cord. And the cord, like, I don't know, like he pulled it way too hard or something, and the cord like swung up, and like the metal prongs on the end of the laptop cord, like the kind you plug into the wall, the metal prongs, it was like that thing of like a million to one like bank shot where it just like they went directly into his eye.
Oh, God.
Like, not even just sort of, like, glancing off of his eye. It was like his eye was the outlet for those. It just went right in. And then I actually Twittered. He said, ow, metal prongs in my eye. That hurts. Ow. Which I wrote down immediately. And then I was like, oh, that's too bad, Greg. I'll be back in a second. Bye. And I ran to Twitter like, Greg, ow, metal prongs in my eye. That hurts. Ow, send.
And then came back and said, do you need to go to the hospital?
And his eye, but
after you Twittered, because, you know, your priorities are in order.
Well, look, I mean, the people have to be told. It's like, you know, it's you know.
Is his eye all right?
It's like that guy in Vietnam, you know. It's like I could either take a photograph of the guy being shot in the head or I could stop it, you know. No, I came back and his eye was very, very demonstrably not all right. It was like swollen shut by the time I got back in the room. To be fair, Sarah was here and she didn't help either. She laughed. I think at one point he was trying to find a patch or something. And then this whole, like, Kelly Clark was here, and then this whole, like, insane – it was not even on the air. I think it was, like, before they even started their show. Then this whole retarded argument ensued. It was like some terrible Larry David, Tarantino, Kevin Smith outtake where something horrible was happening, but instead we were having, like, a zany conversation about the thing. Then this whole conversation ensued about – because Greg's like, I don't know, I got to do the show, but my eye's swollen shut, and now it's, like, leaking something. And whatever, it's like – I'm laughing because it's okay now, I guess. I haven't seen him. He could be dead for all I know, I suppose. He could be all like Boardwalk Empire or something. But then he was like going to put like, you know, he was going to like rubber band a paper towel or something over his eye. But then we had this whole conversation about which eye was he supposed to do that over. And is it like the lazy eye that you cover up or is it like the good eye that you cover up? Or we couldn't, you know. And if whatever the answer to that is, like, is it the case if you injure your eye, should you just leave it shut or should you put it right back to work so that it doesn't, like, you know, swell up? And we couldn't figure out which eye it was, so I think he ended up covering up neither of them.
That's horrible.
See, when you leave early, you miss these things, Dawn. You're not here for the slice of life that is plugs right in Greg's eye.
Wow.
I'm just saying. Let's do one more here. We'll take a little break.
All right. Netflix Incorporated is raising the prices of some of its subscription plans and is shifting its focus to streaming video as more members move to the internet to watch movies and television shows. Its shares surged more than 7% in trading on Monday. For some reason, I'm slurring a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You have excess saliva in your mouth. You sound like Alfred Hitchcock.
I don't know
or
why.
Michael Reagan.
With high speed, I'm like Sylvester the cat all of a sudden.
Yes.
Why is this happening?
You're like the shiny guy.
With high speed online access now becoming a household staple and various gadgets making it easier to connect high definition TVs to the web, Netflix is realizing it needs to evolve as internet streaming goes mainstream. The company is based in Los Gatos, California, and previously announced that more of its members are watching its content streamed over the internet than on DVDs.
Steamed.
Did I say steamed?
Yes.
To deal with this shift, Netflix says it will spend more this quarter to license streaming content than to buy DVDs. Netflix said Monday its subscription plan for unlimited movies and TV shows streamed over the internet and unlimited DVD deliveries with one DVD out at a time will increase by $1 a month to $9.99.
Which is still great, though. I got to tell you, I just on Saturday when I woke up and I couldn't sleep for a while, I logged onto the Intertron and I immediately went to Netflix and I watched an episode of The American Experience. It was a whole thing about the Great Depression, about the Wall Street crash. And it was like, I didn't even know it existed. And then I went on Netflix. There it is. Hey, I want to watch it. You know what? Netflix, it's just the most American. It really is like the embodiment of all that we deserve in this country of ours. We're like, I want it now. Yeah. You know, and like, and I have it. Oh, fantastic.
Well, if you don't have any interest, if you don't have any need to actually get the DVDs from them at all, they're also going to be launching a $7.99 a month streaming only plan in the U.S. to accommodate the
online
shift.
Because they're okay, so it's not like they're getting rid of DVDs, but they'll have the option. You'll have the option of going streaming only.
Well, I think they are. They are actually. He says they are primarily now a streaming video company,
phasing it out.
I think they realize that. Yeah, that they are, and like they said, they're now going to be spending more money licensing streaming content than buying DVDs.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I can see that.
So for the time being, you'll still be able to get DVDs, but there's certainly it's on its way out.
I mean, because it's like they have to, they got to mail those, and there's the cost and the cracking and, the damage. Like, I always get the goddamn cracked DVD, too. Always. Like, I'll order something. Lara's the one who uses the Netflix thing most of the time, but occasionally I'll order something and it, like, shows up. Always. There's a big, split right down the middle of it.
My thing is, I pretty much exclusively use the streaming content, so I only have the one DVD a month thing, and then I'll get like a DVD that I can't get streaming, and then I'll watch it and I'll completely forget to send it back, and so I'll have it for like 3 months.
Sits there forever.
So it's not really making it worth my while, so I might as well just go with the streaming only thing.
And the great thing about Netflix, you and I mentioned this, is that it remembers where you are. So, like, even if I watch it, like, on my laptop and then on my iPhone and then on, like, the computer and then here and then whatever, it always remembers, like, oh, hello, Rick. Would you like to pick up, one of the following 9 programs? I have saved your place in all of them. Now, that's where also, by the way, where you're glad that Netflix doesn't do the porn thing, because you know that inevitably guys would just forget to, like, reset it, or I don't even know if you can reset that stuff. I mean, it's like if you don't finish the program, I don't know that there's a way to, like,
there is a
get
a
rid
Netflix-like
of this.
Like, program for porn, though.
Probably.
No,
I mean, there would have to be.
I can't remember what it's called, but there is.
There's like an everything for porn. Yeah, well, porn, I mean, I would not be surprised. I would bet my bottom dollar right now that whatever Netflix is doing right now, that the porn company did it first. Because porn and video games are the two things that really push the technology. Can I just tell you this, speaking of pushing the technology? Porn and video games, they've long said, and it's true, are the things that are really, those are the engines that drive the advancement of technology. I mean, really, no fooling. I mean, it's like anything you think of. Like, for example, here's the thing. Like, all the stuff we do here, the streaming and, and archiving and making it available on mobile devices and, offering it around the clock but also making it interactive, all of that stuff was done by porn sites first. Bruce Egler actually noted at one point, and this really is true. He just said, if we had to do it over again, we should just find somebody who runs a porn site and just ask them how to do all this, because they've done all of this stuff. So I got, at the urging of Siegfried, of all people, he actually sent me a link to this. I have resisted for so long. I don't even know if I should talk about this now. I have resisted for so long the pull of the games on iPhones, on my iPhone. I don't do Plants vs. Zombies, right? Because I just know that I would be sucked in. I resisted forever. And then he sent me a link to the new game from id Software, which is called Rage. And as Aaron pointed out, it's like they don't even really try anymore. It's like Doom, Rage, Kill, Bang, whatever. Blood, blood, blood. Shoot, run, bang, bang, die. But this game called Rage, and it's John Carmack is the guy who created Doom and Quake and all those games. He's developing a new engine that they say is going to be the last engine from id, like, forever, because it's going to be so scalable. But I guess the full, like, 360 and PS, PlayStation version of the game will be out, like, in 2011. But it's like a preview. They have made iPad and iPhone versions of this game, this id Software game called Rage. And it was like 99 cents. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. And I love id Software. They've never made a game I didn't like. And I downloaded it, and it's like the most mind-blowingly high-resolution, immersive first-person shooter I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's just like, which I guess maybe not true, but I mean, immersive is maybe not the way to put it. But I mean, in terms of like the graphics and the action and the gameplay, I mean, it's the most fluid, stunning looking first person shooter I've ever seen. And it cost me 99 cents.
And so it's just sort of
and
like
it works on my phone.
A double tap to shoot or what have you?
It's what they call a rail game, which is like it's a first person shooter where. They call it a rail game because it's like Autopia or something, where you are basically being – it's like you're on a track basically, and the game is walking for you. So the walking is automatic. But you aim with like your left finger, like your pointer finger in your left hand. You aim with that, and then the lower right-hand corner is like you tap it to fire, and then you tap the upper corner to reload or whatever.
Okay.
And so each of the corners does something. Like one corner changes weapons and one corner. And it's like the thing is there's not even any like instructions or anything. It's like you learn it in like 5 seconds. You're like, oh, fire, reload, change gun. Oh, start, you know, and you're just going through. And of course, then there's like a thing with four arms and 12 eyes that jumps out at you. And then you shoot it in the head and it explodes. And it's awesome. And it was just amazing. It's like better than the best game in the world was like 5 years ago. And it was 99 cents. And this is just like the teaser version for the iPhone. It's just amazing.
It's interesting having the iPhone, how the pricing structure for things is like all over the place in a lot of ways. Because like I got I play Angry Birds, and I think that costs like $2.99.
Right.
Honestly, $3 for a game, and it
seems
that's
crazy,
deceptively just dumb.
Right.
That like, you know, you have like a slingshot and you fling these birds at these things and you knock things down, try to kill the pigs. But it's really insanely fun and very addictive. And there's a lot of gameplay. There's an awful lot of levels of this thing for the amount of money that you've spent on it, which is awesome. On the other hand, like I was looking for audiobooks to listen to, and went online to the iTunes and Amazon and
right.
iTunes and what have you, and looking for the new Stephen King book. I'm trying to think if it was the audiobook or if it was the
Kindle version or whatever.
But I think it was the audiobook.
Right.
And it's like, and I looked up at my husband who was sitting across the room, and I said, they do realize that, like, unlike that audio books are just digital information, right?
Right.
That it's just ones and zeros. That it's not like a physical book that has to be printed on paper and bound and shipped to a store where people are paid a salary to stock it.
How much was it?
It was $23.99.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
And I just looked at it and went,
You're
out of your mind.
No, I don't think so. Well, and they're basing that on – that's because they're basing that on some equivalent in the physical world.
Yeah,
that's
and,
the, you know.
But, I mean
– you don't have to convince me. I'm just saying, like, that's why. Because they just can't – they can't swallow losing that much profit. They just can't, you know. I think it causes them physical pain to think about the fact that – because, you know, the thing about that is it's not like the book cost them nothing. As somebody once said about medication, it's like, you know – The pills cost 4 cents each to make, but the first one cost $10 million or whatever.
Right.
So I get that they have to pay Stephen King to write the book, but it's like every subsequent copy of the audiobook cost them, you know, like nothing. So you figure they could lower the cost to some greater degree, but they just won't. They just can't. They don't have it in them to do
and
it.
And the thing is that this is what the music industry, well, what iTunes figured out pretty
right.
quick, that people will buy millions of something if it only costs 99 cents.
Right.
And they know this about the games too, that you can sell 16 million of something at 99 cents
a
piece.
I saw the by the way I saw some advance work for the sequel to Angry Birds, just so you know. It's gonna be from the pig's perspective.
Oh,
not even making that up.
Oh,
totally
those pigs.
Totally serious.
Those pigs are
goddamn pigs.
Those pigs are so smug and they chuckle.
I'm glad I've never seen that game.
They deserve.
I don't even want to look at
it.
When I got my iPhone, that was the thing. Our friend Todd Tulsis was talking about. He's like, have you seen Angry Birds, Rick? I'm like, no. Like, don't show it to me. I don't want to know. Come back after this. I'll talk about Boardwalk Empire. We got your snuff watch. Geek, unbelievably, we haven't gotten to the geek watch, as strange as that may seem. And more. Stay there. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I should start working it. I think I've got some Lenny D. Christmas songs that I should be working in for this.
Yeah,
I got to gonna roll this out. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We want to take a moment to welcome a brand new business partner. And before I say anything else, I'm going to give you a website to go to. That is Christmas Mountain Trees. And that's just like it sounds, all one word. Christmas. No X or anything. It's ChristmasMountainTrees.com. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They're a third generation. I think it's actually that thing like the parents always do, where it's like you have kids basically, so you have free help for stuff. You know, like free. You know, the people you don't have to pay to like work. So they say third generation, and then they put parenthetically the fourth generation helps, which I think is where mom and dad say like, here's what you're doing like all through December, you kids. So it is a third generation going on fourth generation family farm to full-time farm, and this is what they do. They grow and they care for Christmas trees, as opposed to somebody with like. You know, it's just like some guy, and we've all done this, where it's like the stack of trees in a lot, where you go and you're like, and this guy goes, Folks coming in, I've got 14 trees to chew. It's mind-boggling. Look at these 14 trees, the variety. You'll be here hours choosing. You know, just trying to get them out as soon as possible. And I think I speak for both you and I, that I'm just nuts for Christmas. I really is. I think Siegfried actually was the one who described me as being, quote, gay for Christmas. And it really is true. It's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and gay for Christmas. That is the Rick Emerson story.
You hella love Christmas.
I really do. That's the thing. And I don't love it in like a kooky way or an ironic way or just whatever. And I know that everybody's supposed to go, I hate the holidays, Christmas, whatever. Like, that's your problem, not mine. I am nuts for Christmas. I love it. And it's like, and you grow up, especially in America, where you get the popular image of Christmas put into your head, where you get the, you know, the thing that you've seen on like every collectible plate and like every Norman Rockwell painting and every Christmas special and every Christmas book and every Christmas play and every movie you've ever seen. And there's this like fantastic, very romanticized vision of Christmas where there's the big pillowy mountains of snow and it's the crisp, cold air and you're going and, you know, going to get the perfect tree and you take it home and there's hot toddies and there's, you know, hot chocolate. And dad is, you know, like he's bringing in the tree in a sort of manly way, but you know, and it's, you know, fits perfectly in the house, and it's got the big branches, and it's not all scraggly and filled with weevils or whatever. And it's like, but it's like you don't ever get that experience most of the time because you're my dad, where you just went and you got like a plastic tree that then just. And then I read something a few years ago. It's like those plastic trees. Look, don't get me wrong. I had a plastic tree for a long time, and I've said, I've said before that it's like for many years. You know, it's like I grew up thinking the plastic tree was like how everybody's tree was supposed to look. I read this thing a couple years ago. It's like it's made of, you know, what do you call it? Oil and petroleum. And it apparently just like leaches gases like into the air of your home. Or you're just, well, it smells great. Smell that pine and cancer. As you're smelling like the fake tree that they would then spray like this aerosol stuff on. To like it. It's just, you know. It's no good. So the Christmas experience that you see in your imagination, you know, you may not have had that yet, and let's be honest, this is a thing, especially if you got kids. If you have kids, that is, I mean, really, all, it sounds so corny to say it out loud, but that, no kidding, all, you know, whatever aside, that is the thing about Christmas. It's like you give your kids, like, the perfect Christmas. I mean, it's like you've done your job as a parent for the next, you could basically just go to Vegas for the next 10 months and let them fend for themselves at home with, like, you know, a stack of Swanson dinners. You do the great Christmas, you've done your job. So I'm going to give you this website again. It's ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And here's what you do. You drive there, you go there. They open on the 26th, which is the day after Thanksgiving. That's this Friday, November 26th, 10 a.m. The regular hours Wednesday to Friday are like 10 to 4:30. Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 4:30, all the way through December 19th. You go there, and it's like a whole experience. I mean, it's not like you're just going to go in, and it's like a drive-through triorium or whatever. A guy like just sticks a thing in the back of your truck, and like you know, like you're paying for your ticket at the airport or something, and you just, you know, is you go there and it is an entire day where you see, you know, this vast expanse of trees. And I mentioned this last hour that there's 100,000 trees, and I'm not saying that's not hyperbole. I'm not exaggerating that.
Actually, you said 85,000 trees.
The guy actually, well, here's the thing. He actually erred on the side of caution. I was talking to Troy and Jennifer, and they're the couple that that run Christmas Mountain Trees. And I actually said, don't question, how many trees are there? And he said, oh, you know, 100,000 or so. And I said, really? And he goes, well, I mean, you know, and he was like doing the math in his head. And he said, well, we've got 60 acres. And you figure there's, and he was like figuring however many thousands that there were per acre or something. And he said, so, you know, 85, 90, probably more than that. But, you know, 85, 90, like he was trying to be so humble about it. He was trying to like, you know, well, I don't want to brag or anything. There's maybe 90,000 trees or whatever.
A man doesn't want to brag about the size of his Christmas tree lot.
I'm just saying it's like astounding. So you go there and you can actually see, you know, three of them, you know, cascades from there. You can see, you know, St. Helens and Rainier and Adams. You go there, you get, you know, you get the hot drinks. They give you the hot chocolate or the cider. If you want to cut down the tree yourself, you actually can. Otherwise, you find the tree you want. Maybe a tree that's been there for like 8, 10, 12 years. They say like, that's the tree for me and my family. It's the perfect tree. And they'll cut it down. They'll actually shake off the excess needles, so it's not going to cause you a big ruckus when you get in the house. And then they'll bale it, which is where they twine it up. And so they basically put it through sort of a reverse funnel, and it wraps twine around it. And then you get it home, you put it in your living room, twine comes off, bam, tree springs into place, and it's like, it's perfect. If you want to go and you just, you want to find the pre-cut tree, so you go and you say, hey, that tree right there, and you don't want to, go out and wander and, look for it yourself. You can do that too, but they got a huge selection of those. So when you're going to look for this, by the way, it's not like they're just sending you off into the woods, like your Bilbo Baggins or something.
And they have wagon rides.
That's what I'm saying. You go there, it's not even that, they got this like a custom-built, it's like this huge like tractor thing. It's like that thing from Killdozer, but with less killdozing, where they are taking you through this huge expanse of trees. And again, to say it's a huge expanse of trees, it doesn't really do justice to it. The view from this place is just exceptional. You go to the website right now, you can see it. You go to christmasmountaintrees.com. And then here's the best part. After you go, you pick up your tree. And while your tree's being taken care of, they're getting rid of the spare needles, they're wrapping it up, whatever. They've got this huge fire. You sit around with your family. They bring you more cider, more hot chocolate, more whatever. And you're there relaxing while a guy's, putting the tree on your car. And then, you take it home. And then you're, best dad ever. That's the other thing. Let's just cut right to the chase. Then you're, the best parent who's ever lived. So you got kids? I'm telling you, this is the way you want to go. So it opens Friday, November 26th, 10 a.m., that is Friday, November 26th at 10 a.m., or you can really get, for once, the Christmas experience that you've seen in your head. And you can do it for your family as well. So you go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. That's one more time, just like it sounds. ChristmasMountainTrees.com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Oh, I need you.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Still to come, we'll talk about last night's Boardwalk Empire. And so forth. We got your Snuffwatch coming up in just a moment. We'll find out what Dawn Taylor has chosen as her ringtone to represent incoming calls from me, Rick Emerson. By the way, this sounds wrong. If you want to see the boy being strip searched, I'm just saying. But it was on Drudge this morning. And it's one of those things that, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Like, I don't.
It was on Drudge this morning. It sounded just ever so slightly like you said he was on drugs this morning.
Well, I'm not some guy that, you know, like I only believe in conspiracies in as much as I believe that people are just innately, like, you know, people are just kind of jackasses. That's really the only extent to which I believe most conspiracies are true. I will say this. I don't know that this is the case. I have only the comments on YouTube to indicate, and that's always like a real minefield of intellect there.
Yeah.
But, it was funny looking at the comments on YouTube for this video. It's the videos of the TSA, and they're searching like an 8 or 9 year old boy or something. I mean, he's young, and the dad is there, but they're making the kid like strip off his shirt, so he's basically like nude from the waist up. It's just, it's weird. I mean, it's not even perverted. I guess it's just strange, awkward, especially if you're a, you know, you're a kid and you just feel weird about it anyway. But on YouTube, there was this whole. I amuse myself by reading the message board sometimes because it's just filled with, like, just refuse of humanity. But there was a huge thread on the YouTube comments for this video claiming that the number of views was steadily going down throughout the day. They're like, first the views were at 50,000. Now it's at 10,000. What's up with that? And it was like they were just insane about it. So, like, as though the government doesn't have if you had vast conspiracy powers as a government— like, that's what you would spend your time doing, is rolling back the odometer on a goddamn YouTube clip. I would just be having people killed left and right. I mean, I would just, like, I wouldn't have time to do anything. I wouldn't have time to tap phone calls, open mail. I would just be having people assassinated, like, 24 hours a day, like, everyone who had ever crossed me. So, you know, the government's got better things to do than to alter the number of views on a YouTube clip, jackass.
Well, if you go to the visual aids to look at the video, you'll also find a picture of a girl with a hand sewed onto her foot. That was from a story we read on Legion of News about a Chinese girl whose hand came off in a tractor accident. And until the stump is good enough that they can reattach it, they sewed her hand to her leg just above the ankle. So that's what that picture is.
It's so creepy. I mean, it's great, and it's sort of a science marches on in a creepy, horrifying way. But that's the weird thing where they were talking about, like, they just now did the first, like, leg transplant or something, which is effed because they were able to put a hand on her leg. How is it you can't put a leg on a leg?
Well, I mean, granted, I don't think the hand is actually a functioning hand.
I'm just saying.
They're just doing it to keep all the tissue alive.
Well, you know.
They haven't connected the ligaments and things. It's just, it's the blood flow is flowing. Connecting the whole leg so they actually, you know, flex and move and stuff is far more difficult.
By the way, we've got somebody who says, just so I can ratchet people up a little more. Somebody says, I can't wait for Thursday morning. We are flying to Los Angeles. And he says, my wife in her wheelchair will be forced to stand and walk through the detector without touching or holding anything. So I guess there's precedent that is what she's had to do because she's not, you know, not incapable of walking. But I guess walking is very difficult. So she gets to stand up and walk through the thing without actually touching or leaning on anything. So that'll be fun. And then he says, I'm hoping they ask me to lift up my fat so they can check underneath it. F them. Awesome. Then he signs up by saying, you should draw a handgun on your chest and metal paint. Hell yeah. All right. Just let me call you for the bail, friend. I'll be all over that.
Yeah, nothing is going to go wrong here with this trip.
All right. I had this thing where I wanted to this is like way more effort than it's going to be worth, but I had this whole thing where I wanted to get, like, you can get, like, you know, metal business cards, you know, like, you know, where it's like your name etched or whatever. So I wanted to get the Bill of Rights or something etched on a metal business card so it would beep when I went through, so I could just be like, oh, I'm sorry, I guess I have to hand you my rights, fascist. But then I decided that's, even for me, it's just like way too much effort.
Yeah.
It's just way too much effort to be a big drama queen for 10 seconds.
And this guy's making like $8.50 an hour.
That's
like,
the thing.
You know.
It's like, you know, it's just some minimum wage with a gun who just hates his life, you know? Like, if they actually had the guy who ran the TSA there, like, I'd do everything I could to make his job difficult. Like, I'd make him search me just so I could, like, accidentally whiz on him. Like, oh, I don't know, I'm sorry, I have bladder control issues. Ooh, what if you warned them ahead of time?
That you have bladder control issues?
You know, yeah. Like, if they give you the pat down, you go, like, just be careful. I have a very sensitive bladder. If you even touch it, it goes off. Seriously, yeah. Dude. It's like, and then just let it go.
I guess it would depend on the TSA agent and
how bad
of a day they had had.
But you wait, if the guy's a jerk, though, you just hold that back. You hold that in your back pocket. And, just to keep them on edge a little bit, just to make their day a little more interesting. Like, you just be careful. Like, sometimes it's fine, but there's a hair trigger on that thing.
So you just make sure your bladder is full, just like a loaded gun you may or may not need to use.
That's the thing is, Don, you pray you never have to use that. You keep it behind glass, but you want that extinguisher full if the fire ever comes.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Well, we should figure out exactly what you ended up choosing. So you got your iPhone. How long has it been now that you've had your glorious, godlike iPhone?
Oh, God, I don't know. Several weeks now.
All right. Is it? Do you still occasionally just take it out and just stroke it?
I use it way too often for too many things. It's just too terrific.
Yes, it is.
It just has too many terrific things that it does. And
let me ask you this and be honest, because I know Android people do this. So this is we're all whatever phone you use, we're all of a mind on this. I saw this great, wasn't really a cartoon, it was like an infographic of how specific phone users view other phone users. And it was like what other phone users look like to Android users. And it was like the iPhone user was like a giggly blonde, you know, soccer mom. And the BlackBerry guy was just like a T-Rex holding a phone. But do you judge people when you see them, when you see what phone they're using?
No.
See, I do.
No,
I totally
really
do. I absolutely judge. Here's who I judge. I don't judge Android people. I mean, I do a little bit, but not that much. Because, you know, and I don't mean to sound like I'm being snarky. It's a nice phone. Whatever. My wife has one. She's fine with it. You know, my mom loves hers. Whatever. So, you know, you got an Android, hey, have at it. Doesn't matter to me. Here's the thing. Here's where I judge a little bit. I judge when I see somebody who has a smartphone that you can tell probably cost a pretty penny. That is like neither an iPhone or an Android, because that's the thing where it's like a guy just wants to be like he's just trying. It's like the what do you draw? I use the contrarian 555, where it's like he just wants to be a jackass who's using a phone different from anybody else. That's the thing I don't get.
I have to admit that in the same sort of smug way that people act when they drive a Prius. Now, if I see somebody who has like one of the a touchscreen phone that isn't an iPhone,
right.
I do have that feeling like oh.
Sad for you.
How sad. You bought the wrong thing.
Yeah. BlackBerry Storm, we're looking at you.
Yeah.
All right. So you have custom ringtones for your friend Eric and for your husband Patrick.
Right.
And so now the third custom ringtone will be for me, Rick Emerson. You had many.
Yes.
What were? Could you give like maybe without giving the winner? Could you give like some runners up? Like what did you almost choose? For this?
I almost went with the Spanish version of Yankee Rose.
All right.
That was definitely up there, that was really the second. The winning thing just seemed so, patently obvious as soon as it was suggested. And frankly, it was suggested by a couple of things. In fact, it received a third vote from listeners Jack and Tina, but who sadly did not send their entry in until too late. They emailed Friday at 7 p.m. So it was more of like, I'm taking Jack and Tina's vote as more of a thumbs up to what I had already chosen.
All right, so it was an endorsement. They were
right.
Underscoring your decision.
So we actually have two winners. We have listener Andy and listener Dan, both of whom who chose Weird Al, White and Nerdy.
Excellent. I am Rick Emerson, and I support this ringtone.
So that's what I will hear when you call me.
I wholeheartedly endorse that. I got to, can I just tell you this? Here's one of the damnable misery. Ah, never mind. I was just going to tell a story that nobody cares about, even by my standards, just long and pointless. All right.
Well, I will be emailing Dan and Andy and telling them that they won. And,
congratulations, Dan and Andy.
Work something out with me, recording a little something for them.
Now, Dan and Andy, now is that like, are they, is that two different people,
they
two
are,
entries, or are they together?
They are two different entries.
Okay.
Andy actually suggested his first choice was the Spanish version of Yankee Rose,
right.
And then White and Nerdy. And Dan sent me five suggestions, but the number one on his list was White and Nerdy.
All right, so you will be recording a little something each for them,
yes.
Hello, this is Don Taylor. Dan isn't home right now,
exactly.
Or, whatever.
We will figure out what it is they would like.
I don't know what practical use there is for this, but sometimes you sound like the ship in Aliens. You have 5 minutes to reach minimum safe distance. You kind of sound like her occasionally.
Really?
I'm just saying you could find like a little You do like a, have you ever thought about doing like you could do like a you could be like a you could do video game voice work. You could do you have that kind of voice. I could see you being the you have a voice that has a certain range to
well,
it.
Well, now that I am a professional radio personality,
that's right,
I should really figure out how to audition for these lucrative voiceover gigs.
Wield that clout. Yeah. Hey, by the way, you know we're coming up on we don't have time to talk about this today, but you know what we're coming up on. We're coming up on the season finale of Leverage. You know what that means?
That means a little Rick Emerson as
the newscaster,
as European newscaster.
That's right, with his continental style. Back to hell up. Awesome.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we should do the snuff watch.
All right. So this, let me try to guess once more. So, all right. So it's a woman. She's not a zoologist, not a singer. Not a politician. From the United States.
Yes.
Over 65.
No.
It's one of those things where I'm asking like it's going to help at all. It's not going to help.
You're not going to guess this.
I'm never going to guess this. All right. Here is your snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Former Milwaukee, Wisconsin police officer and Playboy Club bunny who gained national notoriety after she was convicted of murder and then escaped from prison has died in Oregon.
No, I never would have guessed this.
Lori Bembenek was 52.
Bembenek.
Bembenek was convicted in 1982 of fatally shooting her police detective husband's ex-wife and sentenced to life in prison. She escaped in 1990 and fled to Canada. Supporters cheered her flight, selling Run Bambi Run t-shirts and bumper stickers. You really don't remember the whole
Lori
Bembenek thing? This was 90 she escaped.
No. Well, no, because that so she came to Oregon in 90?
She fled to Canada in 1990.
No, I must have been out of the. I mean, I would have been 17. So you think, you know, the existence of the word Playboy in the story would have gotten my attention? But no, I don't remember this at all.
Well, she was captured but later released after pleading no contest to second degree murder. Her story was made into a TV movie starring Tatum O'Neill.
No, I have no recollection of this.
Bembenek's lawyer Mary Warer said she died on Saturday at a hospice care center in Portland, Oregon.
Her lawyer's name was who?
Mary Warner.
Okay.
Warer.
I just wanted to hear you say that again. Warer.
Ms. Warer says the cause of death was liver failure.
Uh-huh. All right. It's just one of those names that's funny in and of itself, and also, like, hearing you say it is funny because you're having, like, a sort of a addiction problem today. Your enunciation is up. And it sounds like it's like you're having to say, like, harfur or something.
I was sure you would know who this person was.
No, and I feel like I probably should, and I just don't. You know, but I have strange, like, I have weird sort of gaps in my pop culture knowledge. There's things that I just don't, things that I don't know. Now, that's... But I mean, again, are you thinking that I should have known her because of the Playboy model fleeing to Canada thing, or the settling in Oregon thing?
It was kind of a big cultural thing at the moment. The whole her name being Bambi and her being an ex Playboy
and
club
she
bunny.
Did kill someone, or yeah. She was accused of killing someone.
No, she shot her husband's ex wife.
Wow.
And she was sentenced to life in prison.
No, I don't remember this at all. All right. Well, I got nothing. All right. So there's your snuff watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us later on the week when our guests will include Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, Mr. Big Jim Willig. We will talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, I believe. See, now I say that it's going to be Aaron Mesh because I always pick wrong.
Thanksgiving.
And this coming Thursday we'll be doing our annual Rick Emerson show, Thanksgiving Spectacular. Last year, the Thanksgiving Spectacular last year was actually sort of, I mean, it really was spectacular, but it was also different than it normally is because it's, last year we did it at Tim Riley's glorious abode and we filmed it. I'll tell the whole story on actually on Thanksgiving maybe, but last year's was just, It was just the weirdest thing last year. Last year's Thanksgiving event was just so bizarre in so many ways. But anyway, so we will be here this Thursday. We'll be doing Legion of News as we always do. And then this very fine radio program will be storming the airwaves a little bit after 1 o'clock on Thursday, November 25th, which is Thanksgiving this year. And so we'll have a cast of tens of people cycling through throughout the day as, you know, and plus.
Or so we hope.
Yeah, you know, or else it'll just be Dawn and I just sitting here just doing shots. We should open the can. We should give up the last of the Four Loco.
We should. We should chill it.
There
nicely.
You go.
Put it on ice.
And we can just, yeah, we can all, and we can, yeah, and I can pour a round of shots and then we can sing Auld Lang Syne or something.
Well, I actually have a Thanksgiving song I'm going to share at the time. Well, when I was in high school.
Is this something you have written?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, my friend, my best pal from high school, and I, he and I wrote a song, a Thanksgiving song when we were in high school. And every year I try to teach it to more people because it's been my hope that eventually it will make its way into the culture. But so far, it hasn't really been successful.
It has not really worked out for you.
No,
Let's do a couple more, and then we'll talk about Boardwalk Empire, which aired last night. But I know we got some stuff we got to get through here.
Okay. Where am I? Oh, here we go. Capri Anderson, the woman who was found locked in the bathroom of Charlie Sheen's suite, said she's suing the actor for battery and false imprisonment.
Capri Anderson.
Yes.
Well, what does she do for a living?
She's a hooker.
Is she you didn't even let me get to, like, is she a scientist of the penis? Okay.
And she plans to file a criminal report with the New York City police. Appearing on ABC's Good Morning America this morning, the adult film actress... Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. She's a porn star.
She's a porn star.
Well, like it's not possible she could be both.
She said Sheen yelled racial slurs, threw a lamp at her, and grabbed her by the throat. The 45-year-old actor was briefly hospitalized after security at the Plaza Hotel reported he was disorderly and had broken furniture in his room. He voluntarily went with authorities for a psychiatric evaluation and was released from the hospital the same day.
Wait, so he yelled racial slurs. Is she a Nubian porn star?
I really don't know. She said Sheen became increasingly unruly as the evening wore on. She told Good Morning America. She actually was being interviewed, by the way, on Good Morning America by George Stephanopoulos.
Oh, that's so great. I wonder if he just sits and looks down at his shoes sometimes and just thinks, like, Christ, what have I done?
He just thinks about the paycheck.
Yeah.
Thinks about the enormous paycheck and then sighs deeply.
Think about your vacation in Tahiti.
She told him, it's hard to say, being that it was my first time hanging out with him, if it was normal everyday behavior for him.
Wow.
After dinner at a restaurant, she accompanied the fairly intoxicated Sheen
fairly
to his,
intoxicated.
To his hotel street, where, quote, there was a little bit of romance, if you will. But in the room, Sheen became increasingly agitated, including making racial slurs that she did not specify.
What is the if you will? Is that the thing where she's trying to, like, use a phrase that she read one time, like in the New Yorker?
She was trying to be coy about the little bit of romance, which was just boning. You know, I mean,
I thought maybe she was referring to his member and its dimensions or the duration of the lovemaking.
They went back and there was a little bit of romance, if you will.
Well, I thought she meant like a little bit of romance.
Oh, I see. What you
I was holding my pinky up just
there. He then snorted a white powdery substance, she said. I wonder what that could be.
He snorted a white powdery substance.
Which I'm sure her attorney said, don't say it,
don't
was, cocaine
say it was cocaine
because you don't know.
All right, yes.
When it became really uncomfortable was when he put his hands around my neck, she said. At that point, things began to very rapidly kind of fall apart and just really get out of hand.
When he began choking off the oxygen flow to my head, I felt that the evening had started to take a downward trajectory. Things were trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Later, he texted her and offered her a sum of money that she did not specify.
She's full of specifics, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, he was snorting a white powdery substance. There was some romance, if you will. He offered me a sum of money, and note that she didn't even say choking. It's when he put his hands around my throat. That was when things started to. She decided to opt out of the evening at that
Once
point.
Once the choking started, it was like
not the sexy choking either.
It was not as romantic anymore.
Is it, the funny thing about him? Here's the funny thing about racial slurs, Don. The strange thing about the racial slurs thing. That's what I was asking if she was a chocolate goddess of some kind. Because Rick Emerson isn't advocating racism. I'm just saying. Wouldn't it be kind of funny because it would seem exactly like the sort of crazy thing he would do? Like if there was really no reason for him to be shouting Like, what if he just, like, if he just started screaming about the Vietnamese, like, for no reason?
He started calling her a dirty Mick.
Yeah, I mean, just like
something really,
like, out of the blue. You know, goddamn Albanians, you know, and just like for, like apropos without any kind of context whatsoever. Like, that would almost make the whole thing worthwhile if I thought that he was just like that crazy.
Well, she actually is a Caucasian woman from the sexy photos.
Is there
if you Google Kepri Anderson,
or you could just turn your laptop around and show me. Don't make me work for it. Oh, hello.
There she is.
All right. She is a fine young lady, isn't she? She's an attractive lass.
Yeah.
All right. Not really my type, but I mean, you gotta give it up to whatever conglomeration of protoplasm in the universe came together to make that. Well done. Excellent. Well, that's exactly the sort of woman Charlie Sheen should be with. You know, somebody who looks just like that. Maybe with like hair that's a little more teased out.
From the photos, she seems to be exceptionally proud of her butt.
Yes, well, you know.
Many pictures of her.
Everybody's got one special thing, Don.
Her butt.
All right.
Okay.
Should we do the Geek Watch here?
We should.
All right, here's your Geek Watch for Monday.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is your Geek Watch for Monday.
Well, this dovetails nicely with what we were talking about earlier about porn and gaming driving the computer industry. The selling point of Microsoft's Kinect video game system is that you can play on it without any remote or joystick.
White people only.
With a webcam-style add-on for the Xbox 360, a user can control and interact with the system only using gestures and spoken commands. A Microsoft official said last week the company also plans to use those Xbox-mounted cameras to target ads to the people watching the games by monitoring who is in the room as the ad plays. The system already uses facial recognition technology to sign in players and match them with their profiles. Dennis Durkin serves as Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer for Microsoft's Xbox video game business. He told investors on Thursday, "We can cater which content we present to you based on who you are."
How would they even know that, though?
How many people are in the room when the ad is shown? How many people are in the room when the game is being played? When you add this sort of device to a living room, there's a bunch of business opportunities that come up with that. But since reports about the Kinect camera's monitoring capabilities first surfaced, it's raised plenty of questions about privacy. After all, the idea of a camera watching us in our homes might strike some people as a little bit creepy.
Well, first of all, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily know who was in the room that we know of. It would just tell you how many people are in the room. But presumably, if you've got like X number of profiles registered there, they would be able to make a reasonable guess based maybe on what game is being played.
Mm-hmm.
And the game, in other words,
what else you have registered for?
Yeah, and because you really only need two or three pieces of information, because it gives you an exponential, you know, because it winnows it down. So like, based on the game plus, let's say, what you're signed in as or your avatar plus maybe what you last watched on Netflix, that probably is enough to tell you. You know, that's user five. We know user five because user five always plays this game and watches this kind of movie. Here's the other thing. It's interesting that we're just horrified by the idea of the TSA scanning our bags with an X-ray thing, but Bill Gates can just put a camera into your house that just peers out. I mean, it's like the Eye of Sauron or Thomas Gill that just looks out, like, into your living room.
Yeah.
It's just like the big blinking eye of Bill Gates, but we're like, yeah, but I get to play skee ball, and it's like with swing in my hand. It's awesome.
Well, one of the great things about Spielberg's movie Minority Report a few years ago was that when he was actually designing and planning that movie, he got together, as only someone like Steven Spielberg can, he got together a bunch of these
super nerds,
brainiacs who know what the future, you know, holds for technology, what direction things were going in, so that he could actually have future technology in Minority Report that is based on stuff that is actually in the planning stages and is projected to actually exist. So you see, you know, him using the whole wiping things back and forth in the air thing, which did not actually exist for user purposes at the time that movie was made, but now is starting to actually become in the marketplace. And another one of the things that movie did, there was that scene where he was running through a shopping mall, and there were advertisements that would recognize people as they walked by.
Right.
and then suggest that they might want to buy certain things based on, because it did facial recognition and it knew what their purchasing habits were. And this is the first step in something like that, is if the camera is looking back at you and can recognize you, if it gets plugged in with your Facebook, with your Amazon buying, you know, habits, with that sort of thing, you think that Amazon is creepy the way it suggests something to you now. It's like when you go and you log into a video game and the video game just knows it's you.
Right.
And then suggests that you buy stuff.
Well, I guess at a certain point I just have to, like, wash. I think maybe I'm at that point already, where as long as it's passive. In other words, like the TSA thing, because I got to be honest, it's like the TSA thing just bugs me because it's like an inconvenience and because it slows me down. And also I don't want a guy probing my sack. So there's that. But it's like, you know, but I've always said before that it's like you're just online. You have no privacy. There's just the illusion you have privacy. And it's weird that that actually doesn't bother me all that much. Like the online privacy thing, I mean, it's not like I'm doing anything illegal or whatever. So it's like, I don't, you know, I mean.
Well, the thing with your online privacy is that I think for me, because it doesn't really bother me that much either. And I think it's because I'm constantly aware of the fact that I am opting to use the internet. I am choosing to use the internet, and I am choosing how much information I put where.
Right.
Something like a TSA groping, it's basically they've got you over a barrel.
Yeah,
it's
that's like his choice.
You know, if you need to jump on a plane to go somewhere, you don't have any choice than to go through whatever hoops they want you to jump through.
All right. There's your Geek Watch. Unnerving.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next.
Oh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Awesome. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll talk about last night's Boardwalk Empire here in just a moment. Hey, speaking of geeks. Well, I was going to say there's two types of people in the world. And then I was going to make that dumb binary joke, but you know I'm not going to do that. That's the thing. I'm going to opt out of that. I will say that you know, geeks come in all shapes, sizes, varieties, manners, fashions, and forms. You know, there's the tell you how the replicator works kind of geek, and then there's the guy who knows like what a joule is, and you know, and what milliwatts are, and amperage, and things. I am not that guy. You may be that guy, and if so, you know, bully for you. If so, you're the kind of guy who makes money on guys like me. Let's just get to the cut to the chase. That's really what that is. You know, because there's, you know, as your house becomes more, I mean, really, I mean, here's the thing. If you think about it, like, I don't know how to fix anything in my house now. And it's basically just like a garbage disposal and a dishwasher. I mean, that's the technology I've got in my house. You know, like, I can't fix any of that stuff. I can't even imagine I'm going to fix some super gaming system that's, like, measuring my sweat or something to decide, like, what breakfast cereal it wants to sell me. It only freaks me out. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, garbage disposals. So, in any event, but the garbage disposal is a good example of this, where it's like you got the water and the electricity coming together. And I told you that, like, I was talking to Joe Squires about this, and he said that he gets people all the time. They call him, and it's like they bought, like, a jacuzzi or something, and it never occurs to them. And he told me that one time, I always talk about the extension cord thing, guy bought a jacuzzi, had it delivered to his house, and literally, the guy had just stopped at like a Shopko or something in the way he met and bought like five extension cords, which is hilarious on several levels. A, because it doesn't, like, it's got that special plug like your washing machine.
Yeah.
Also because even if the plug from the jacuzzi fit, the guy had no problem, like he was just going to lay some extension cords like from the house out the sliding glass door onto the deck, like up to the jacuzzi. Which he then has to, which is filled with water, by the way, and that you have to step over the extension cords every time, and occasionally, like, somebody's going to trip on the cord, and so you need to do a Don Taylor and, like, lean out and, like, jiggle the cords together while you're in the bathtub or something. That was the hilarious thing, is, like, the guy, it wasn't even meant to have the plug, the guy, like, had no problem just stringing all this together. Now, you're not that guy, so don't worry about it. See, sometimes people just have this thing that they got to fix the problem themselves. If it's electricity, or if it's, you know, they want to install a different outlet, or they want to get the ceiling fan or something installed, and guys especially feel like they got to do it themselves because they don't want to look silly or whatever. Here's the thing. They've seen worse, all right? They've seen sillier. It doesn't matter what your problem is. Doesn't matter what what electrical, repairs or installation or upgrade or anything in your house you get it fixed. They've seen worse. They've seen stranger. They've done so many of these things that they've just seen like every shade of the spectrum you can possibly imagine. So you contact Squires Electric at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503 252-1609, SquiresElectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors and supervisors. It has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, whether it's repair, installation, you know, they got smoke or water damage or something. Or if you do have, like, you know, a jacuzzi or something like that that is, you know, that is beyond your ability to install or maintain correctly, don't screw around with that, because that's a one strike kind of a thing there. So you don't want to do that. It's 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. 503-252-1609, SquiresElectric.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
O'Hare is nice this time of year. I check my bags and find my seat and buy a beer and settle in. Such is my life here on the road. Now my seat back is up, tray table stowed, and there's nothing to do. I gotta get myself through. So I am shopping in Sky Mall at Bye Bye Ohio Mall. It always has just what I need. When I get to the gate and remember too late, I should have brought something to read. I'm okay, 'cause I know that I'm gonna shop Sky Mall. Bought a pair of bonsai trees. I bought a big fake rock where I can hide my keys from everyone. And I imagine what all my friends would say to see this lovable Santa dance and sway to my favorite songs. My favorite holiday song. And I am shopping in Sky Mall at Five Mile High Mall. It always has just what I need. When I get to the gate and remember too late, I should have brought something to read. I'm okay, 'cause I know that I'm gonna shop Sky Mall. And then somewhere above Detroit, some successories that say lead with vision.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when we'll, one day late, do our recap of Walking Dead and Dexter. And this Thursday when we do our Thanksgiving spectacular. Speaking of recapping and so forth, so we should talk about last night's Boardwalk Empire. By the way, I did not know that this this opening theme song, I didn't know this was the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
No, I didn't either. It's a terrific song.
I just discovered. I don't think I've really ever heard any of their music that wasn't in that movie about them and the Dandy Warhols or whatever. Which has left me with such a bad taste in my mouth that I've like resolved to never hear anything by them ever. So then I was suckered into it by hearing it as the theme for this. How great are the opening credits to this show, by the way? I never get tired of watching them.
Very HBO, though. I mean, it's like they have a very distinct style for the opening credits for their original program.
It's especially great when you consider the fact that it wasn't too long ago that they said we were just sort of done with opening credits as a culture.
Yeah.
And that, I remember there was a big deal about the Friends theme song, that Rembrandt song, because we'd gotten rid of, because TV shows didn't have opening songs anymore. And that was the first one that did. Here's the thing. I remember seeing Shadow of the Vampire, God, like 10 years ago. It must be almost 10 years ago that it came out. And it was like a flashback to an earlier time because the movie had full-on opening credits that took, like, not a huge amount of time. It was like 3 minutes, but it just seemed endless. It just seemed like an eternity waiting for the actual movie to start. But HBO does it right, where they've got great opening credits that I don't mind watching, where they're just fantastic. It's about like the Dexter ones I skip. I've skipped them since the second episode because they creep me out. They're just too weird.
It was really, but it also, again, it was something, the Dexter opening credits, very clever.
Well done.
The first few times you see it, but by season three, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, he's slicing an orange. Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah. All right, so last night's Boardwalk Empire, which was, it could be such a cheap gag with, John Harriman? Harriman? Yeah. Harrowing? The guy missing the eye.
Yeah.
It could be such a cheap gag and such a cheap, like, stunty acting kind of thing to make him, like, maimed, and he wears, like, the metal prosthetic or whatever on his face. But that guy's actually such a good actor that he pulls it off, because that is one of those things where normally you'd see it and it would be so hackneyed that he's like a man stuck behind like a metal version of his own face, and it's like this horrible symbolism or whatever. But he really makes it work, so much so that whole thing where what's-her-name is reading the Wizard of Oz, and she's talking about he's like the Tin Woodsman, and I actually was getting all choked up. I was it's true, he is the Tin Woodsman.
And that was, again, like the whole face thing being hackneyed. As I was watching that, I was thinking that it was something that it skates right along the top of being just really kind of trite.
Right.
You know, and really cloying, and yet it's not.
It's because the acting is so good. You know, she's really good, and he's good, too. Like, he never overplays it. Even the little tics he's got, he does that thing where he goes, a lot. And he doesn't, but he doesn't do it too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the thing where, like, in the wrong hands, if that had been a network television show, it'd been like a Stephen Bochco show, where it would have just been so bad. It would have been awful. Who was it that said that she had to quit watching? Was it Cheryl that said she had to quit watching because she couldn't stand seeing Steve Buscemi have sex?
Yeah, she said that yesterday.
She said
the first time she saw Steve Buscemi having sex, she just that turned her off so much she couldn't watch the show anymore.
So how horrifying is it though to see what's his name, the creepy FBI guy, having sex with the gun mall, you know, with Buscemi's ex, who I guess he's now just officially like kicked to the curb or whatever.
That whole scene though, when he was in the house with Margaret though, was just so full of like you're just waiting for something terrible to happen at any moment and wondering what it's going to be.
I kept being reminded of that that scene from Terminator 2 where the guy licks the side of Linda Hamilton's face. I kept waiting for him to do something like that.
Yeah.
Where he just, you know, did something horrible, like pulled out like a bunch of her hair and ran away with it or something. So creepy. Hey, here's a dumb question. Maybe I'm supposed to recognize her and I'll feel really dense if it's somebody who I should know. So so Steve Buscemi's ex, who ends up hooking up with the FBI guy, who is that? Is it somebody of note?
No, I don't think so.
She looks so familiar. She looks like somebody that I have seen before. Maybe she looks like one of the Tilly sisters or something.
I was going to say, she's got kind of a Jennifer Tilly kind of a quality to her, but not.
I find this, maybe it's a testament to her as an actress or something, but can I tell you, I guess she's conventionally attractive maybe. I find her so revolting have, like, since the first episode. And normally guys can get past that. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a horrible human being, if you're hot.
No,
I find her so disgusting.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that because it's not even about her physically, but it's like her as an actress, her character is just so vile. And I can't even believe I'm saying this because it doesn't sound like, again, a thing a guy should complain about, but she's so sleazy. She is so unbelievably sleazy. And that thing where she's calling the FBI guy daddy, which, you know, I guess, again, in the right hands, maybe it's taboo and it's hot and it's whatever. Not with her. That the stuff that would be hot, it's like she is hot be gone. It just doesn't work at all with her. But yeah. I did see the whole thing coming, by the way, when they're in bed and then he does the thing of, like, turning her over because he wants it the other way.
Yeah.
I totally saw that coming. I do find the thing, I have to say this, I find the thing of him, of the FBI guy being, like, a weird religious nutcase, that's the one thing, one of the things in the show that I find really trite. Because I think that's, like, that's a little too predictable to me. The law and order Puritan who's, like, secretly perverse. I mean, it's not like it doesn't happen, but that's the one thing that feels very much, it feels very stuck to me. It's like how, it's like in American Beauty, how the homophobe has to secretly be gay or whatever. And it's not that it doesn't happen, it's just that feels a little rote. But that guy is so authentically creepy that he really makes it work.
That whole scene was just really vile.
Yeah, starting with him going to the bar and and he just gets the whiskey and he hit me again and he has like multiple shots or whatever and then she's there too, I guess. So, but it was a great episode and they continue to make Mrs. Schroeder and Jimmy just two of the most fascinating characters on there because they have all this weird depth and layering. Here's the other great thing about that show. Steve Buscemi's character is very much like Tony Soprano in a specific way. That, like, Tony Soprano had this, Gandolfini as Tony Soprano would do this great thing where it was like a silently or exasperatedly suffering tolerance of, like, the thousand pains and aches every day of being him. Like, occasionally Gandolfini would have this thing, and it was where he would really be allowed to act, and he wasn't just a collection of, like, heavy breathing and punching guys, where he would just be sitting at the breakfast table in the morning, and Carmela would, like, serve him cereal or something, and Tony Soprano would just sit there eating breakfast cereal and just glowering at nothing, and just kind of going, like, and just kind of squinching his eyes a little bit, and you saw the whole thing of, like, him just going, like, another goddamn day of this nonsense, just another stupid day of all of these idiots I have to deal with, and without even saying anything. It was just like a whole, sort of like that life was just a parade of inconveniences and problems. But that's the way it was, and he just recognized that that's how life was. Buscemi does the same thing. It's like when he's having to tell Jimmy, that, like, look, the guy freaks out my kid, he's got to keep the prosthetic on all the time. And it's like he's not trying to be a bad guy about it, but it's just he does that teeth-gritting sort of thing of, like, ugh, life. Boy, yeah. It's just one big collection of pains, isn't it? Like, it's the life is just a series of pains in the ass he has to deal with, and he conveys it really well.
Yeah, one of his great takes on lines is the, and I can't believe that I have to tell you this.
Right, right.
Seems to be sort of the underlying. Method.
He's like the long-suffering mother or something. And Tony Soprano had that too, but it is the whole, like, ugh, it's like, and I've got this pain up and down my left side, but I can't deal with it because I have to take care of you, you moron, as he's berating one of his underlings, for whatever, which is the thing you see, again, done a lot of times where there's, like, the bright, there's, like, the brilliant, villain, and then he's got moronic henchmen. And that can be done in such a cliched fashion, but they do pull it off really, really well.
I have to say, though, I every time we have any kind of a scene with Jimmy's lady,
right,
not his wife,
right,
with her and her female companion and them talking about going to Paris, every time I see anything having to do with her, I just keep thinking, and
there's no chemistry between them. Yeah, I don't care about the plot, and they don't act well together. There's no spark there.
And also, just her story arc doesn't seem to really
connect with anything
else that's going on in the show.
It seems like one of those things the writers love, and no one has the heart to tell them they have to cut it.
Yeah. She's completely incidental to everything else that's going on.
It seems like something you should see on the DVD set,
Yeah.
Here's a storyline that was excised from the season.
I mean, we all saw that, the guy getting beat up accidentally was going to happen eventually. because Jimmy is apparently painfully dense when it comes to who his lady is actually smooching on.
Daddy's kissing, mommy's kissing friend, isn't that the boy?
Mommy's kissing
that
friend.
That was a great moment. But can I just say, and we have to wrap this up here because we're getting over time, but here's one thing about that show that is really good, and it's hard to do this because it's like, you know, one of the things that you either have or you don't is presence, and on-camera presence especially, where even without doing anything, you know, your weight is sort of, you know, there. That guy who plays Al Capone is legitimately menacing. When he's on camera, I get nervous because it's like, well, what the hell is going to happen? Like, what is he, you know, is he just, it's like how Joe Pesci was sort of able to do that for a while in Goodfellas, where you were just like, every time he was on camera, you're like, what is going to go wrong in this scene? Where you're hoping that nobody upsets him.
I did love his whole scene, though, where, you know, he gets a little schooling from a rabbi that he needs to wear a big boy hat.
Right. But even then, I was like, oh, God, is he going to beat the rabbi down at the bar mitzvah?
He's going to stab him in the eye with a pen.
Ugh. All right. Tomorrow we'll talk Walking Dead and Dexter. That'll be on Tuesday, so we'll do that a day late. And so forth. And done. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. We will see you again tomorrow at 1 p.m. following another exciting episode of Legion of News, which you can hear every weekday from noon until 1 at Cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show has Don Taylor at the news desk and Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer is Bruce Agler. Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, as well as our many fine business partners. It is Monday, November 22nd, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. An encore of Legion of News is next, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Thanks for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.